You know, I never really understood trigger words until I got... roommates. I hated my roommates. Except for you, Isaac. He watches my videos. Oh, James, you didn't hate your roommates. You just mildly disliked them. Yes, I did. When I first moved out of my house and went to college, the day I moved into my apartment and I opened the front door, this is what I saw. Keep in mind all the buildup that has gone into this moment. First, I had to get accepted into the school, then pick my major and classes. Then I had to find an apartment close to the school and get everything set up there. Then I had to pack everything up into a suitcase, kiss my dogs goodbye, and then be all on my own for the very first time. I opened the door to where I'd be living for the next 8 months, and this is what I see. Someone sleeping on a couch, he was wearing some bright fast food employee uniform, the TV is on, there's a Halo 5 poster hanging on the wall, the sink, counter, and table is full of dirty dishes, there's a big industrial-sized trash can that is overflowing, inside the fridge there is an empty box of Dr. Pepper, a bottle of ketchup, and a jumbo Costco-sized pack of hot dogs. Where did all these dishes come from? Fun fact, those hot dogs were still in the fridge when I left. But the worst thing that was there was about a million basketball cards just lying on the floor. I'm not even exaggerating, here's proof. Okay, so I got a single room because I brought all my drawing stuff, and I would feel bad if I shared a room with someone and he had to deal with all my drawing stuff being there, and also I wanted to be alone. Looking back, I'm so glad I got a single room because that room couldn't even fit myself. Literally, I could stand in the middle of the room, hold my hands out, and without moving my feet, I could touch the walls of the room. Maybe I just have long arms, I don't know. I mean, I could settle for a small bedroom. But what made living there so horrible were the roommates. What I didn't realize is that these boys also got private rooms. So that means that they too were socially awkward and kept to themselves. Which you might think is a good thing, but you'd be wrong! On the first night of being by myself, I unpack all my drawing stuff and I set it all up. Then I turn on the computer and the screen is just black. Nothing was turning on. I tried everything to fix it and it just wasn't turning on. Eventually, I contacted the people who made it, sent it in, and then I got it back working. But during that week while the tablet was being fixed, like, seriously, no joke, that was probably the worst week of my entire life. I'm being serious, making comics and YouTube videos was what kept me sane. And that first night of being on my own and my tablet broke, I cried, guys. I couldn't even eat food, I was that sad. I hit rock bottom. I remember just watching Captain Sparkles and Game Grumps highlights all day. But then, the day I got it back, I was a drawing machine. I posted a comic the very same day. So let's spend the rest of this video talking about these previously mentioned roommates I had. The first person I need to talk about is Isaac. He was the only one that I like, and he's also the only one I told that I made YouTube videos. Now, this boy wore Obey hats, he vaped, and he said stuff like, "That's dope." But you wanna know why I liked him the most? Because he did the dishes! Like, me and him did the dishes. It wasn't just him, okay? I'd probably never become friends with him in any other circumstance. Just wanted to say that he was the cool one. I like him. Hi, Isaac. I miss you. I was looking at this post on the internet, and it was where the old memes are today. And for the after picture for the Scumbag Steve meme, it looked exactly like my roommate, who I'll just make up a fake name for, Steve for convenience. I'm pretty sure I was roommates with a meme. Just put a fedora on this meme, and boom, that's my roommate, Steve. And it was a very fitting meme, too. This guy wouldn't do the dishes, he always cooked this ramen thing in the microwave, and would leave this gross juice stuff behind, so then when I would go to use the microwave, it would get my paper plate soggy, so I would have to check every time before I used it to make sure there was no juice stuff behind. And also at night he watched anime. Without headphones? Subbed? Anime has a certain sound to it, I don't know if you knew that. It's like normal Japanese, but really, emphatically. Luckily, it was usually late at night when he started watching, so I would just have to get to sleep before he started and I would be all good. James, why didn't you just ask him to turn it down? I did! One night, I went into his room and I said, "Hey man, can you turn it down?" And you know what? He did turn it down for that night. That night. That one night. The very next night... But you know, he wasn't too bad. He would spend most of his time in his room playing video games, and I would spend most of my time in my room drawing. So except for the microwave juice thing, we didn't get in each other's way too often. Here's actually a funny story. So when I was filming the part in the vegan video when I crumpled up Oreos over Reese's Puffs, Steve walked into the kitchen and he saw me filming this sugary vegan concoction, and I just said to him, "Don't ask." Okay, so here's the roommate that I hated the most. His fake name will be... Hunter. He was the one asleep on the couch when I first walked in, and he was the one who had collected all those billions of basketball cards. Just basketball cards. And he kept them all in the front room. What's the point of having sports cards when you can't even play with them? I mean, I spend money on Magic the Gathering cards, but that's because it's an actual game that you can play with friends. What do you do with sports cards? I mean, I guess you can leave them in the front room of your apartment. Maybe one day your roommate might make a video about it, though. He left his Mountain Dew bottles on the floor. He farted in public. He'd always complain that Steve didn't do the dishes, but he wouldn't do the dishes either. One time I was tired of doing everyone's dirty dishes, so I bought a big stack of paper plates for everyone to use. But Hunter took the paper plates to a party without even asking me, and he didn't even bring them back. But the worst thing this guy did, one day he told me, "My ex-girlfriend doesn't want our dog anymore, so he's coming to live here."
What?
So this boy wants to bring a dog in an already very small cramped apartment. I couldn't believe this. The dog's name was Snoopy and I loved him. Hunter would put him in his kennel at night, but one night I was like, "Hey, Hunter, Snoopy can stay with me if you want." And then boom, from that day forth, I was the one taking care of Snoopy. Snoopy would now sleep in my room. I would be the one who took him out for walks, and I fed him slices of lunch meat. What was great was that when I would go into the kitchen and Hunter would be watching TV, he would call for Snoopy. "Snoopy! Snoops! Snoops!" But he wouldn't come. This dog would follow me everywhere. And then one day Hunter said, "Hey, do you just want to have Snoopy? I was going to get rid of him." And then I said I would take him. And then later that same week, Hunter moved out. He took all the toilet paper too. He basically gave me a dog. And of course I loved that dog. But we lived in such a small space and I was always busy with school and drawing. I knew these weren't the best conditions for a dog to live in. And I'm pretty sure my apartment didn't even allow pets. So I asked people I knew if they wanted Snoopy. And my grandma got one of her friends to take care of him. So I dropped Snoopy off and I've never seen him since. And that's it, the end.
You should gamble. That's right, I said it. You all should gamble so you learn firsthand how stupid gambling is. Here's the stitch with gambling, okay? Gambling is only fun if you don't understand math. Humans have been gambling since the dawn of whenever money was invented. I mean, just take one look at the Las Vegas Strip and you will immediately understand how lucrative the gambling industry is. They built the Statue of Liberty, the Eiffel Tower, and Caesar's Palace all on the same street. Gambling is everywhere in Las Vegas. As soon as you step off the plane, you're bombarded with slot machines in the airport. Are you kidding me? You can't wait to gamble? As soon as you step off the airplane, you just immediately go, "I gotta win big!" Look, I understand why people gamble. I get it. I play Magic the Gathering, and opening up a booster pack and not getting any expensive cards is the exact same feeling as losing your entire life savings. The first time I gambled, I was in Australia for VidCon. After the convention, me and a bunch of mates went to a bar, and I found out that there was a casino attached to it. And I thought, perfect! I'm in a different country, so my parents will never find out that I gambled! Plus, I'm of legal age and independent. Let's get our gambling freak on! I was only comfortable asking my friend Moz to borrow some cash, because I feel like if a friend asks, "Hey, can I borrow some money to gamble with?" you're never going to see that money or that friend ever again. All Moz had was a fiver, which is Australian for $5. So I only got one chip to gamble with, and I decided to spend that one chip on roulette, because that's the only game I knew how to play. I know how to play blackjack, but I know there's a mathematical algorithm for the best, most perfect way to play, so I don't know how to play blackjack, you know? And poker is too intimidating. I can't deal with people hyperanalyzing my facial expressions to see if I'm bluffing. I already know I'm a bad liar. And the last time I actually played poker was with Luigi on my DS. Here's some honest strategy for the game roulette, okay? Sometimes a roulette table will have a TV screen that gives you stats for hot numbers at the table. Like it'll say, "Red 23's been popping. It's been hit 14 times today." Ignore those statistics. Every square at a roulette table has an equal chance of hitting regardless of whatever the previous numbers were. Just ignore those stats and always bet odd. So, with just one chip to my name, I was able to turn that single chip into 200 Australian dollary dues. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm feeling it. Oh, the gambler's high. Oh, I'm not sure about your investments, but a 4,000% profit is very good. I could have kept going, but I really wanted to rub my winnings into Moz's face. I cashed out my chips, went back to the bar, and then slammed the two hundos on the table and said something cocky like, "How about them cheeky buggers, mate?" And Moz was like, "Did you just win those 200 wibbly-wobbly dollary dues?" "Yeah, and it's all mine." And Moz went, Hey, you still owe me 200 Australian dollars for that other thing I did for you. Oh. Yeah, I guess I do owe you that. Then he scooped up my two Australian hundos that I was just rubbing in his face. It's an anomaly that my very first casino experience was so positive. It was like the devil himself was tempting me to continue gambling. See? Gambling lets you pay off your debts. Never stop. That, or I'm just really good at Australian roulette. This is probably how people get addicted to gambling, huh? Casinos are designed to make you stay in them for as long as possible. There's no clocks or windows so you can't see how late it's getting. Chips are used so it doesn't feel like you're spending money. And there's supposedly free alcohol, but I guess they run out whenever I show up. But even knowing all the ways casinos manipulate you, it's kind of fun just being inside a casino. All the lights, the old ladies at the slot machines smoking away their already decaying lungs, the people crying in the bathroom because they have a gambling addiction. It's great. Hey, buddy, don't worry. You're going to win next time. I'm sure of it. To counter the life-ending stressors, though, people will give the advice, if you're going to gamble, have a set budget and just assume you're going to lose it all. But I couldn't even do that. Not the sticking to a budget part. I couldn't bring myself to gamble away my allotted budget. When I went to Vegas, I told myself I was only going to gamble $300. But after I lost $200, I thought to myself, yeah, I don't think this is a good investment anymore. One time I was on a slot machine and I got the five buffaloes in a row or whatever, and I got the chance to win a jackpot. There was a mini game on the slot machine where I had to flip over tiles that had either bronze, silver, or golden apples. And if I flipped over three golden apples, I'd win the golden jackpot. And if I flipped over three silver apples, I'd get the silver jackpot, and bronze apples gave the bronze jackpot, which was the lowest jackpot. The gold jackpot was $5,000. So I flip over the first tile, and it's a golden apple. And I think, then I flip over another tile, and it's another golden apple. And that's when I got the feeling. Oh, my God. I might actually win $5,000. Then I flip over three bronze apples in a row, winning the lowest jackpot. I don't even remember how much it was because I spent it all on the very same slot machine. And I immediately knew what happened. The game was dangling that golden jackpot right in front of my face, making me think I was one golden apple away from making it big, even making me pick which tile to flip over so it would make me feel more in control, when the whole time the computer could just change what was on the tile that I flip over because it's a computer! It can cheat! It's Schrodinger's jackpot! And before you think I just got really bad luck, that very day I was walking through the casino and I saw a guy playing on the same slot machine and he got to the same jackpot minigame. And I stopped to watch him and the exact same thing happened. He flipped over two golden apples and then three bronze ones. I don't know what the statistics are of that happening twice, but it's mighty coincidental. Why are we still gambling if the majority of people who gamble lose all their money? Because it's fun. It's a stupid way to spend your money, absolutely. But the rush, man. In Australia, there were multiple times where I could have lost all my money, and statistically I should have. But whenever an odd number was hit, I couldn't help but throw my hands in the air and celebrate. I was hugging the dealer over winning $20. However, no matter how many times you win the jackpot, if you spend enough time in a casino, you will always lose. Ever hear the phrase, the house always wins? That's because they have the mathematical advantage and computers who cheat. Gambling is not an investment. It's not a way to pay off your debts. It is entertainment. If done responsibly and in a social setting, gambling is absolutely fine to indulge in. And if you get upset that you lost all your money, what did you think was going to happen?
You guys, frick. 100,000 subscribers. I am just amazed that so many people actually watched my stuff. So I'm in Arizona visiting my family because it's spring break. So I'm not going to be able to make comics this whole week. I do have another video planned out. But for this video,
I thought we could get a cake
and put
100,000 sprinkles on it. How much even is 100,000 sprinkles? Doggies!
Okay, let's count out 500 of these and then weigh them and then see how much 100,000 would be. Okay?
Make sure you wash your hands. 100, 200, 300, 400, 600, or no, 500.
This is how much was left of the pile.
Not that much, to be honest.
Frick.
Can you bring the sprinkles in? Yeah.
Yes.
This is 10 ounces of sprinkles.
So this is 500 sprinkles, right? There's not that much, you know? You wouldn't think that 100,000 would be that much, you know? Maybe like a full cup and maybe like a little more. You know, it's not that expensive. The dog wants to go outside. Oh, he wants to come inside.
Come on in, Pooch.
So, I weighed the sprinkles. And so a thing of sprinkles weighs 0.31 ounces. That means 100,000 would be 62 ounces. Just to give you sort of a reference, this is only 9 ounces. So that means I would need 7 of these. So I was going to do this cute thing where I add 100,000 sprinkles on this. What are you doing? So I was going to do this cute thing where I did 100,000 sprinkles to mean each of my subscribers. But I'm not going to pay $28 for sprinkles. So instead, we're just going to pretend that this is 100,000. Try and get some on the side. So I just want to thank you guys, each and every one of you, for subscribing. If you're subscribed and you're watching this, then that means one of these sprinkles is you. Well, not all of you are represented here, because I would have had to put on 4 more of these cans, and I just thought that wouldn't really make a good cake, so any number of you could be right here in this big old pile of sprinkles. Some of you are still in the can. I just want to thank you guys again for subscribing and watching and liking my content. You see this red one? This red one is going to be I Hate Everything, and I kind of appreciate him too much to eat him. So, and also Your Movie Sucks. He subscribed to me, so this is him. And Fanboy Flicks, I really like his videos. He makes movie reviews, so we're not going to eat him. And Jaden Animates actually subscribed to me, so that's really cool. Hey, Jaden, I really like your videos too. So we're not going to eat her. But yeah, everyone else, you're going to help feed me. Man, it really just puts into perspective how many people are subscribed. Like, each one of these could represent 2. No, you're not going to eat cake. So again, I just thank you so much, you guys. Thanks for watching my videos. Thanks for subscribing. By the time this video comes out, maybe a couple hundred more of you will have subscribed. So just, there you go. I don't want to forget anyone. Bon appetit. This one's for you guys. A lot of waste of sprinkles. No, you can't have any. Thanks for subscribing. Oh, man. I'm just gonna clean all this up.
It's not even 100,000. I don't even know if that's 50,000.
Oh, what do you do?
Yeah, 100,000, that's not going to be that much. We can fit it all on this tiny little cake.
It's a crunchy cake.
It's a crunchy cake. Mm.
So I was sitting in the doctor chair because I was about to donate blood, because I do that, and I was thinking, ugh, the next video is like 6 minutes long. That's twice as long as my other videos. I need to come up with a super short video to keep my viewers quen. So I was sitting in the recovery room eating my pretzels. You know, okay, what happened to the good food you'd get when you donated blood? I remember a year ago when I started donating, they had fruit snacks and double stuffed Oreos and apple juice. Now it's like, here's some water and some pretzels. You're a real hero, you know? Like, that was one of the main reasons I donated blood. Oh, you saved so many lives. Thank you. Yeah. Just give me my Oreos. Like, if I was roommates with Dracula and he offered to cook me a meal, like a good tasting meal for a cup of my blood, I would accept it in a heartbeat. I mean, not every day, obviously. Maybe like every Friday. So this all happened about an hour ago. Well, probably like 2 days ago when this video comes out. And if you're watching it a year from now, it happened about a year ago. So sorry if I don't sound as animated as usual. So it is entirely possible that someone watching this has my blood in them. And I think that makes us related. By blood. So I got into the blood donation business because my dad has O negative blood, which is the universal donor blood. They keep O negative blood on ambulances because O negative can give to everyone. There's no blood tests needed, but I'm O positive, which is the most common blood type. So I'm not special. One time I was in a child development class, and I don't know how the topic came up, but my table started talking about blood types. And I said, oh, I'm O positive. And this girl across from me says, oh, I forget mine, but my doctor said I'm the universal donor. And I said, oh, that means you're O negative. And then the teacher walks by and's like, oh, you're talking about blood types? What are you, girl? And she says, O neg. She said, oh, neg. Like, so many people have asked her what her blood type is, and she didn't want to waste her time any more than she had to by saying, a TIV. You didn't even know what your blood type was until I said it. And then, I don't remember why, but she got her donor card out of her purse, and it says what blood type you have, and she says, huh, on here it says I have O positive. So I guess O positive is the universal donor. And you know those moments where you want to argue with someone because you're so obviously right, but you just don't care enough and you don't want to talk to the person any longer than you have to? You know those moments? So I go, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Gabe the dog died last Friday, the day Trump was inaugurated into office. So that's two things to be sad about. There has been one time in my life that I cried about something on a screen. It was a GIF of a dog being reunited with her puppies. And I don't know what came over me, I just started crying, and I don't know why I'm telling you this or how I'm gonna segue it into the next. As dogs go, Gabe lived a good life. He died peacefully, surrounded by loved ones, which is how I wanna go. What I've learned from this is that if you have pets, then love them right now. Give them kisses, give them treats. Aw, pets are great. I just wanted to say that so people on Twitter and Tumblr would stop telling me. Look at all the emails I got about Gabe. I know current events, guys. I go on the internet. You don't have to tell me. Another thing is that I'm going to PAX South in San Antonio, Texas. I don't have a panel or anything. I'm just going to be walking around. So if you're going, then try and find me. Don't worry, I'll probably tweet about it. Now let's change the tone of this video and sarcastically A some cues. Normally I answer unsolicited cues on my Tumblr, but recently, the cues I've been getting on Tumblr were a little below par. I got a lot of questions about Gabe. This guy said, can you please follow me on Tumblr? Please, please do it. My name, I... And then he says his name, but I'm not going to show his name. This other person asked, what's your favorite color? And then he answered his own question. And by the way, OMG Hugo Campos... My favorite color is dark blue, okay? Get it right. So this time around, I thought, you know what? I'll just ask Twitter for some cues, and hopefully, I'll have some A's. Ever considered getting a doggo? I already have two doggos. Okay, you're gonna have to go in your kennel, Poppy. Hey, stop it! I already have two doggos. Poppy, you ruin everything. You know that? Were you ever bullied? I was in honors classes since third grade, so I was with a bunch of other smart people, so there weren't really any bullies. If there was someone in class that I didn't like, we would just be passive-aggressive towards each other. Could you convince Jaden to do a face revival? I sent Jaden a message saying, face revival? Question mark. Can you do a face revival?
I'll put that on the list. Hopefully she'll revive her face soon.
Oh, it's a good dog. Good doggo. 10 out of 10. Thank you. When you lived with your roommates in college, did they ever do anything creepy? And then she did correct herself to ever, so I just wanted to point that out. Yeah, there was this one thing my roommate did that I'll never get over, and that was that he watched anime. How much money do you make on YouTube? Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because now I can make the title of this video, How Much Money Do I Make on YouTube, and then never even answer the question.
On average, how much do you earn from your vlogging? See, I don't like saying how much I earn.
What other places were you thinking about applying for before YouTube, Subway, and Chipotle? I like how it's assuming that I applied to YouTube, like I put in an application and they called me back like, oh, you're hired! You're gonna be a full-time YouTuber! That's how it works, kiddos. Good question, there's actually a bunch of places. The first place that I applied to was Cold Stone, because I thought, oh, I like ice cream, I'd be good with ice cream. So I filled out an application online. They sent back an email saying, here at Cold Stone, we like to do things a little different. Their idea of doing things a little different was that everyone who applied showed up at the same time. Then we were separated into groups, and then we had contests about who could sing songs about Cold Stone better. The songs were parodies of other songs that were made, with just ice cream terminology thrown in. So my group did a song that was to the tune of Queen's We Will Rock You. And just thinking about it is making me cringe.
I looked up the full song to prove that I'm not lying. I'm not sponsored by Cold Stone, by the way. They didn't even hire me. Those pricks.
When you come to Cold Stone looking for a treat, you know you'll find something cold and sweet. We got mix-ins galore at every store. And when you're done, you'll be begging for more. Singing, we are Cold Stone. Cold Stone. That's why they didn't hire me. Next time you go to a Cold Stone, make them sing that song. I was the type of person at Subway with the mindset, I'll do what I want. I mean, I still followed the rules, but like I didn't wear my name tag. And we were also told that whenever someone got a 6-inch sandwich, we were supposed to say, do you want to upgrade that to a foot long? But I didn't really care, and so I never asked people that. So if some manager at Cold Stone said, hey, every so often you have to sing some awful songs about Cold Stone, then I probably would have quit. But that's a long enough tangent. I applied to a bunch of other places. You know those big stores that have tiny stores just going off to the sides? Well, I would go to those and just go store to store and just apply to every single one of them. I got interviews at a lot of different places. I applied to be a server at an old person home once, and they said I had to take a drug test. And so I did the drug test, I turned it in, and they never got back to me. So but I mean, I eventually got hired at Subway, and I've learned that McDonald's has better sales than Subway, but Subway has more stores physically than McDonald's. So that means they need more employees than McDonald's, which means it's more pathetic to work at Subway than McDonald's. Good question, by the way. Do you remember your first Tumblr followers? Now that you're famous. My first Tumblr followers were my friends from school, but I'm not counting those. I had to make 4 comics to get 1 follower that I didn't know. And it was a porn blog. I tell this to people who are just starting out drawing, but it took me 100 comics to get 100 followers. So it takes a long time with things like this. And you should always be trying to improve your work. I really wish I remembered the first person who followed me who wasn't porn. But I don't. If you knew me back in my Tumblr days, then man, you've been here a long time. In your comic tree tattoos, there's a big heart with the initials J and R. If J is James, then who is R?
Your mom! Do you exaggerate your voice at all for your videos? The way you talk reminds me of Sammy, Smarmy?
Smarmy.
The way you talk reminds me of Smarmy, I'm so cool voice my dad does. No, not at all. I always talk like this. Hey, dude, what's up? Am I recording a video? No.
Okay, but seriously, you do have to sound interested in what you're saying. All right, so back there, I was exaggerating how much I exaggerate. What's your favorite part about YouTube? BuzzFeed? I'm just kidding, it's me. How do I get 40 total Twitter followers? Make 40 total friends? Why? Good question. Let's answer some questions that people I follow asked. They're better than you. Jaden said, how are you the odd one if there's only one of you? Luckily, someone answered for me, that's the point. The Fear Razor said, how odd are you? And again, luckily someone corrected him to old. That's what he meant to say. So, I'm 20 years odd. Did you know that America has never lost a war when donkeys were used? When did we ever lose a war? When was your first kiss? I was wondering if I should save this story for a video, but screw it. That's not good. How long has that been like that? I don't know if this counts as a first kiss, but I was in ninth grade and I was in preparatory school that year. And I was a total ladies' man, by the way, alright? All the chicks loved me. There was this one girl, though, who just hugged me a lot. She would always hold my hands and say stuff like, James, let's walk back to class together! Looking back, I can see that she was going through that phase where she was just like, I need a boyfriend! And I was just oblivious to everything she was doing. One time, it was before class, and she hugged me, and then she closed her eyes, and she did this with her lips. And then I leaned in, and I asked, what are you doing?
I'm trying to kiss you.
Oh, okay. Mwah. I understand now. I don't know if that counts as a first kiss, because I don't even remember her name. I bet you never even kissed a girl, though, Rammy. So I really hope I can get this next video finished before I go to PAX. That's kind of why I'm making this Q&A video, so you'll have something. Except I need to edit this video now, so that's more work. Thanks for watching. Sorry if your question couldn't make it in this video. I got about 1,000 of them, and some of them were pretty stupid. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your favorite color of the alphabet? The correct answer is square. You see, now that's a bad question, because they give me the answer. Don't give me the answer. Let me answer the question myself. It's a square. So, we're gonna end it now. Wear your seatbelt. I know it's late, but can you still accept my question?
This video is going to be a little more educational than usual. Okay, so there's this channel that I used to really like watching called Heart? And I say used to because she doesn't really post that often anymore. She makes videos that combine two of my favorite subjects, math and art.
You like math?
Yes, okay. I like math. So V Heart, I don't know her real name, made videos about math and triangles and transgenderism, and I'm gonna be honest, I've kind of forgotten everything she's talked about. Hexa something, that was one of her things. But every year she's made anti-pi videos. Pi as in the math pi, remember? We're talking about math, not the... Okay, so she posts them every year on Pi Day, which is today. It's Pi Day, if you didn't know that. Let me just tell you something interesting about pi. In 1949, we started using computers to find pi, and we kept getting closer and closer as technology advanced, and we never found the true value of pi, to this day. All those pi to a million places websites? Nope, not pi. Yeah, we've gotten really, really close to pi, and yet, we're nowhere near as close, because it's infinite. But I mean, it's close enough where you physically can't measure that accurate in the real world. But it's not the true value of pi. The true value of pi goes on forever. And we haven't really gotten to the end of that. Okay, so back to V-Heart. There's a high chance she made a 2016 anti-pi video today, right now. So go check it out. Link in the description, if she's made one. So I guess this is a rebuttal video? About why pi is actually awesome? Oh, and I'm gonna be rebuking her 2014 video because the 2015 one was kinda stupid.
Ah, March 14th, that's just an arbitrary number on a calendar we created, yeah!
Man, shut up.
And I actually wanted to make this video back in 2015, but I didn't. Instead, I just made this comic, because last year was hashtag Ultimate Pi Day. So I've actually waited a year now, so I'm excited to talk about it. Let's do it! I hope I'm not breaking any copyright laws by...
This Pi Day, I'm mad about how people worship pi for being infinite, for going on forever. First of all, pi is not infinite.
Well, yeah, it is. But that's not why it's awesome. Every number is technically infinite. You take the number 4 and you add a 0.0. The 4 is still the same, but in theory, you can add a 0 forever, making it technically infinite. And that's just what pi is. It's just a number. It's not infinity. No one's saying that it is.
I know, it's not about its magnitude. It's about all those digits, infinite digits, going on forever. But first of all, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That doesn't make it not awesome. It's right there on the number line between 3 and 4. It's just a number, like I said. Y equals pi is just a straight horizontal line. You take the derivative of pi, you get 0. It's a number. It's just a number, man. Just a number.
Pi is a number, not a process.
Yeah, okay, we agree. But that doesn't make it not awesome. The speed of light is just a number. It's about what that super specific number represents.
Secondly, yeah, so it's got infinite digits. So what? one-third has infinite digits.
Yeah, but pi is random numbers that go on forever. And there's no pattern. That's what's so cool. Do you know what the trillionth digit of pi is? No. No, you don't. It's random digits with no pattern. But I know the trillionth digit of one-third. Spoiler alert, it's 3.
There's exactly as many digits in one-third as in pi, as in 99.999 repeating.
Yeah, the digits of pi are random, but the number as a whole isn't random at all, which is another cool thing. It is the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. Multiply the diameter by pi, you get the circumference. Are you forgetting that?
There's an infinite number of rational numbers. For any two fractions, you can find another fraction that's between them again and again and again. There's never any fractions that are right next to each other on the number line.
Yes, irrational numbers are technically everywhere. Take the 1 millionth digit of pi, change it to a 3, and you get an entirely new irrational number. It's not pi anymore. I mean, this was never pi to begin with, but you can't use this to get the circumference anymore. Nuh-uh, not good. But it's this highly specific irrational number that this special ratio occurs. Not this one, this one. It's why we made this specific irrational number its own symbol. Well, okay, we actually used a Greek letter, so it's not totally made up.
So I don't know why anyone would make a fuss about the grand infinities and forevers of a boring little number like pi.
It's not boring.
The only thing even a little weird about pi is that you do get an irrational number by taking such a simple ratio of such a simple geometric object.
Yes, thank you. It's so weird, right?
Surely that never happens with other simple ratios of other simple geometric objects. Oh, wait, they're in everything.
What? No, okay. If you take one of the sides of a square and multiply it by this number, you get the length of its diagonal between the corners. Okay, so this is the ratio of the side of a square and its diagonal, and it's just random numbers that go on forever. Kinda like pi. So why don't we celebrate this number? Why don't we have a special symbol for it like pi? Well, actually we do. It's called radical 2. Look, you just take this number, you square it, you get 2. Just plain old boring 2. That's not special. You can't square pi and get something like 10. You square pi, it's still irrational. Look at this triangle. Same deal, right? This number goes on forever. But wait, it can be written down as radical 3 over 2, just like what you did in the video. Now this one for a pentagon, we do use a symbol for it. It's a Greek symbol called phi. Phi. Phi? That's really close to pi. I wonder if that's on purpose. Now, phi is approximately this number. Kinda like pi, right? Totally, 100%ly irrational. I think we got ourselves another pi, but wait! We can rewrite it like this! Hey, side note, this number is considered the golden ratio, and has to do when we talk about that swirly, like, seashell thing. And it can actually be found in art, so that's pretty cool. Okay, back to pi. You can't rewrite pi like any of these numbers. Pi is its own number. It stands by itself above the rest. It's not radical 2, not rad 3 over 2, but just plain old 3.1415. That's why pi is so awesome. There's a picture going around on the internet that's like, pi contains the day you were born and the day you'll die. We give the numbers, the letters, every possible conversation you ever had, and every conversation you didn't have. You see, now that's just stupid. That's just the nature of having random numbers go on forever. I could do the same thing on randomgenerator.org if I just generated a random digit forever. Now what does this mean? Do circles even exist? How can you have a bendy line with just straight lines? What is real? Alright, so just to finish things up, this is all bullcrap. Well, not all of it. Well, yeah, all of it. The reason why pi is actually famous and so beloved is because, let's be real, guys. It's called pi. You don't see people celebrating Pi Day because they appreciate how this irrational number is the ratio between the diameter and its circumference. They're celebrating it because it's called pi. And I think that's what happened to pi. People were like, ah, this boring math term has a funny name. Let's celebrate it on our meaningless calendars. Recently, I read the worst YouTube comment ever, and I can't stop thinking about it. This comment lives in my head completely rent-free. It lives in its own private penthouse. The comment was concerning my upload schedule, and it was, "If anime studios can make an episode of anime in 1 week, then these YouTubers can make a video in a month." Initially, I reacted like, "You think that's how this works? You think anime studios post an episode and go, 'Great work, team! Well, time to make the next episode this week. Hope none of you have any plans!'" I know the working conditions in Japan are bad, but sheesh! I guess all the animators are just slacking off between seasons then, huh? And as I thought about it more, I realized, I can't get too mad. This person is just uneducated about the animation industry and is probably a minor. And then I thought, hey,
I know a bit about animation behind the scenes. Maybe I could talk about being an artist and educate people on the animation pipeline. So that way, I won't get any more uneducated comments. For this video, when I say artist, I'm going to be talking about the Google definition of an artist. Noun, a person who produces paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. You know, the pen and paper artists. I'm not really going to be talking about artists who make music or birthday cakes or take black and white photos of sunsets because I want to talk about cartoons. I make cartoons. Now, it should come to no surprise that I'm pro-artist. Well, not a pro-artist. Are you kidding? I know my skill level. I still can't draw fingers. What I'm saying is, I will support anyone who wants to make art. If you're making art as a hobby, then that's a really great creative outlet, and having something physical as an end result is incredibly rewarding. But if you want to turn making art into a full-time job, you might want to sit down and consider a few things. Like, are you sure you don't want to go to law school? The biggest challenge all artists face is they have to eat food to survive. And in this capitalist society, food costs money. So artists are challenged to somehow take being good at making shapes and turn that into money. I know of four ways an artist can make a living. The first way is to be so good at art that people will pay money to hang it up in their house. The second option is to make caricature drawings at beaches and tourist traps. The third option is to sell your plasma. And the fourth option, which is the most common option, is to make drawings that people will pay you to make. And do a little bit of option three on the side. Some artists will take commissions, which is basically an artist going, "Hey, I'll draw whatever you want, asterisk, for $100. And people will go, "What the f-? Art should be free! I was going to give you so much exposure to my 50 Twitter followers!" Or people will go, "I want you to draw this cute animal character I made, and while at first your price might seem a bit high to the uneducated, I understand that art is a time-consuming process and you need to eat too. So here's a crisp $100. But another somewhat more stable idea is that artists will get jobs at studios or work for a YouTuber, and we'll be like, "Hey, we'll give you money if you draw specifically what we want, and if we don't like your art, we'll make sure to communicate clearly what we would like changed and work as a team to do the best we can. Or you're fired!" And that leads us into animation. An important thing to remember for animation is that drawings equal time plus money. Exactly how much time? Well, to answer that one commenter's question, no, an anime studio does not make an episode of anime in 1 week. I think. South Park is what making an episode in a week looks like. And truthfully, that's very impressive. I take months trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to talk about. Making a single episode of a cartoon from scratch takes about 2 years. Don't believe me? Well, let's see what Yakko from the 2020 Animaniacs has to say in the very first episode. At least, we still think there's a President Trump. You see, the writers are writing this in 2018. Now that doesn't mean it took 26 years to make the first season of the Animaniacs. There's a lot of moving parts that happen when producing an animated TV series. For starters, the whole season of the show gets made at the same time. While the writers are writing episode 12, the storyboard team is boarding episode 3, and the design team is designing the bowling shoes that are going to be worn in episode 6. And it's someone's entire job to make sure that everyone's doing their job. This is called the animation pipeline. And there's so many other departments that I could honestly make a whole other video about this pipeline. If you're interested, I'll do it. But just know that it takes roughly 2 years to make a season of a cartoon show. And that's why when shows reference memes, they're extremely outdated. You know, like a boss! It's beautiful, isn't it? This exterior nighttime city skyline background. This background was drawn by one of my background artists, Annie Loomis, and it took 7 hours to make. And it was used specifically for this clip. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. It lasted for 4 seconds. 7 hours of work, 4 seconds of content. So before we continue, I'm going to make you all sit and appreciate this background for another 4 seconds so I can double the value of this background. Backgrounds can be a time-consuming process, and the whole purpose of them is to be in the back of the ground. They're not even the focus. So storyboarders will sketch out a scene to set the staging through layout, posing, and character expression. And during this phase, I'm trying to find places where I can reuse backgrounds or take pieces of other backgrounds and Frankenstein monster them together to make an entirely new background. Like how I used the city background to be outside this window. Or how I took the buildings from this background, the bushes from this background, and the bench from this background and made an entirely new background. And hopefully, none of you noticed. Am I being cheap? Or cutting corners? Absolutely, but that's the point. That gives another background artist more time to make something else, like this James-themed city skyline. Instead of having to draw 20 different backgrounds of a bedroom, we already have a bedroom, let's just do something else, please! It's not being lazy, it's getting the most use, the most mileage out of your hard work. I see this next story pop up on Twitter about every month, and it makes me want to stab my eyes out. If you look at this scene from The Jungle Book and this scene from Winnie the Pooh, these two similarly proportioned boys are eerily moving in the exact same way. Wait, was this plagiarized? Did someone from Winnie the Pooh plagiarize The Jungle Book? No. Remember what I said about drawings equal time plus money? Well, back in the old days of animation, before fancy graphics cards and floppy disks, animation frames had to be physically painted onto floppy, transparent sheets called cells. So animated movies were essentially a really long flipbook with over 100,000 hand-drawn painted pages. Back then, drawings equaled even more time and even more money. This whole sequence had to not only be drawn 24 times a second, but it also had to have the correct timing to look like a little boy was jumping on rocks. Just because you drew 24 Mowglis doesn't mean they're gonna look good when you play the frames together. So if you're making a cartoon movie in the 70s, and you need a scene where a young boy character is just being a dude and throwing rocks, and you need a really climactic fight scene, are you gonna spend the time and money drawing another boy throwing another rock when someone else already did that 10 years ago? Or are you gonna reuse the animation the studio already made, and then have more time and budget to make an even epicker fight scene? If these movies were from two different studios, then yes, that would be a completely different story. But Disney owns this movement of our boy Mowgli, so they're allowed to use that movement on our boy Chris. Turning your art into a full-time job is very difficult. I'm extremely lucky to not only have this opportunity, but to be able to build an amazing team of talented artists to create these cartoons and share them with you. And because of you watching these videos and supporting me, I'm able to reinvest money into the team so we can make better quality content and I can support more artists. It's a win-win symbiotic thing we got going on. So if you ever wanted to get into the art industry, good luck, get drawing, and start putting that portfolio together.
Do you guys remember Jay from the Subway videos? I basically said he believed in zodiac signs and chakras and third eyes. See, I'm someone who doesn't really believe in that sort of stuff. Oh, hey, Black Zen.
Hey, James.
So Jay was trying to teach me about energies and vibrations, and he told me about this YouTube channel called Infinite Waters, parentheses, Diving Deep. Now on this channel, you will see videos like What I Eat in a Day as a Vegan, How to Stop Burning Bridges with People, 7 Amazing Tips That Will Turn You into a Self-Loving Whiz. But he also has videos like How to Open Your Third Eye. So I don't necessarily agree with everything he says on his videos, but I really like him and you should check him out. And the creator of these videos, named Ralph, I just love how he starts off every single video. He goes, "Peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Can I get a hello there?" And it is super peaceful and I recommend it. And on a lot of his videos, he talks about doing a
7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge.
You know, for the amount of times you bring up
the 7-day vegan challenge,
you'd think it would solve all your problems, which is why I, James, have decided to partake in the 7-day vegan challenge. But I'm going to call it the 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Solves all your problems. Can't get enough sleep? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Can't find your car keys? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. People keep interrupting you? You wanna die? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. All these lame-o pleb YouTubers doing these lame-o pleb challenges, like, why does this exist? While they're doing this, I'm actually going out of my way to suffer for a whole week for views. I did some research into what was vegan, and apparently Reese's Puffs and Oreos are vegan.
Well, this is gonna be super easy.
As of recording this, I have already completed the 7-day vegan challenge, and I've kind of delayed making this video because being a vegan has changed me. So while I was doing the 7-day vegan challenge, I wrote this log after each day. I'm not going to read all of it, just the first and last day of the challenge, because days 2 through 6 can pretty much be summed up in... So this is what I wrote at the end of day 1. My rations are already very low. I was not prepared for this. I'm the kind of person that will snack on Cheez-Its and trail mix throughout the day. But now I can't do that, because I had to think of the freaking animals. Every time I'm around food, I just have to keep screaming, vegan, vegan, in my mind so I won't unconsciously take a handful of Cheez-Its. I went shopping for food today, and everything I wasn't allowed to eat looked super good. I was even craving the food that I've never bought before, like Hot Pockets. Who likes Hot Pockets? I accidentally bought bread that contained honey, which I don't know if that's vegan or not. If we've learned anything from the bee movie is that bees have no purpose if they're not making honey. I'm in for a long week. I'm already fantasizing about what I'll eat as soon as the challenge is over. I'm thinking a 4x4 from In-N-Out. I'll try to write tomorrow. And then after that long week was over, this is what I wrote for day 7. In a few hours, all my problems will be fixed, and I will be an immortal being. But I'm gonna throw that all away because tomorrow I'm gonna drink milk again. I've completed the vegan challenge, but I don't feel that accomplished. The best way I can think to describe what I'm feeling is... Oh, it's over. I remember when I started the challenge, I was thinking about all the food I was going to eat once I was done, but now I'm just not craving anything. Still, though, I'm probably never going to do this again. While I was doing the challenge, I went to Sprouts and bought microwavable veggie burgers, and when I cooked them up, they smelled like throw-up. So see if you can tell how much I was trying to hold back throwing up in this video.
So today, we were going to try these veggie burgers, and as I was cooking it, it sort of smelled like throw-up. That almost made me throw up. So we have the burgers and tomatoes, and lettuce. Oh, okay. I'm really hungry right now. Here's a veggie burger. We're gonna try this. We're gonna try and eat this. Hopefully, it, you know, tastes better than it smells.
By the way, that was vegan cheese in the video. I didn't just put normal cheese on the veggie burger, guys. Okay, I'm not a heartless creature. I care about cows. You know, the internet really loves to just hate on vegans. But I don't think it's as bad as the internet makes it out to be. Of course, there will always be jerks in any group of people. And you shouldn't think that you're better than someone else just because of what you eat. Also, I want to mention that while I did the vegan challenge, I would lose my breath just by going up the stairs. Some vegans would probably say that I was malnourished. And I probably was. This video is probably going to get some downvotes from some angry vegans, even though I'm about to compliment them. I think it takes a lot of self-control to do what vegans do. I don't know why anyone would purposely do that. I admire anyone that puts so much care and thought into their diet. I mean, ever since the challenge was finished, I've been trying to eat healthier, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I bought whole wheat waffles the other day, so I can feel my bones getting stronger. So, in conclusion... Unfortunately, the 7-day vegan challenge, baby, solves all your problems. Did not solve all my problems. But even if it did solve all my problems, I still probably wouldn't be vegan. I would still drink milk. You know, because that's what makes ice cream and cheese and nachos. You think I'm exaggerating, but no, you would have to pay me a very pretty penny to get me to be full vegan. Like, no joke, a minimum of $1 billion. Am I glad I did the 7-day vegan challenge? Yes, I am.
Then we got some organic pancake syrup. I think pancake syrup itself is organic too, but we're just going to eat it again. Look, where does it say it? Non-GMO. 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 I haven't had a GMO in days.
You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her... I'll just call her mom's friend. Mom's friend comes up to me and says, "Hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders?" Ew. I think the only reason she chose me was because, one, I'm good at math, duh, and two, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's friend asked if I wanted to chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, yeah, I was alright. There's definitely some Sevies watching right now thinking, oh, I'm not that bad. Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes, I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find. I was so cool. Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important. I don't count, though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24-year-olds, but I don't think that's true. Because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. Is that the odd ones out? Oh my goodness, that's the odd ones out! Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared. They were all still talking in their cliques. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, that sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college, I go to this group of kiddos and I say, so what do you want to be when you grow up? And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying, astronaut or doctor. And then I was going to say, well, you could learn that in college. That's what I was going to say. So what do you want to be when you grow up? They said, nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, why is this old guy trying to talk to us? So then I just walked away. Alright, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube. But that's tacky, you don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, so, do you guys watch any YouTube videos? And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, Rice Gum. Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Rice Gum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, who's that? And someone else said, Rice Gum. And then I said, oh, who's that? And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, the odd one's out! The odd one's out! Over and over, and I just said, hey, back to him. And that was it, we just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool, we ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material. They were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video. And this goes for you college folks too. Kids? Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. All right, lesson's over. We're not gonna do an end card for this video
because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States, because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We wanna get them out before Christmas, but then we're gonna send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything. It's just on the floor.
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
So what is ASMR?
100,000 subscribers.
Why is it sociably acceptable to know everything about sports and dress up, but it isn't acceptable to dress up in fursuits and go to cons?
I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. So I used to work at Subway.
Subway Part 3, baby!
Garfield, that's not... pieces.
700,000 subscribers!
My channel recently hit 1 million subscribers. My sister decided to name him Harry. You sing. There exists a baby naked gen pup. 3 million sprinkles.
I have Jaden Animations here.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hey, hey! Look at me! That's not how you...
Welcome to the 10 million subscriber milestone special.
Being in quarantine has sucked a lot. We're making a Netflix show.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh no, I just killed James. He made these cookies for me? Wow, that's so awesome.
That's
I turn the other way.
And you don't need to pay a background artist to be in the background if you just use blue.
This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it.
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school.
Oh man. What is... poetry?
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask the class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died!
Haha, yeah, they do that.
But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time."
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they-
Oh.
Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to have to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your ninth grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day, he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said, oh no, that's just a typo. Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this, because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant. How do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education. It's funny because he dropped out of college. So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, "Anyone Can Dig a Hole Close Enough to a Ditch, But It Takes a Real Man to Call It Home," which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body.
Okay, class, spell Wednesday.
I don't know how to spell Wednesday.
Well, James, just sound it out.
Oh, okay. So, like this?
No, James, it's Wednesday.
You said sound it out, and that's how you sound it out.
You think you have it bad? Do is spelt with an X.
I think it comes to no surprise that I'm terrible at spelling. I feel like everyone in life falls into two categories. Either you're good at math and bad at reading, or you're weird. And if you've seen my other videos, you know that I'm a math boy. My mom told me that I have dyslexia because she has dyslexia and I have all the symptoms, but we never got that diagnosed by a doctor, so... You can't make me take my meds, Mom! A lot of times what I do to cover up the fact that I spell lower than a first grade level is I will purposely misspell words to the point where it's obviously a joke. You thought I was doing that to be funny, but it's actually because I have zero self-confidence in my spelling and I don't want anyone to point out my mistakes. I mentioned this in a different video, but in elementary school, I was put into an honors program, and everyone had to take spelling tests a grade ahead of their level. And by everyone, I mean everyone except me, because I failed every single spelling test. So I had to take spelling tests that were on level. Ew. Every week when we took a spelling test, I would have to move to the back of the classroom, and the teacher would stand right next to me. She'd call out everyone else's word, which had like 8 syllables, like anti-disestablishmentarianism, and then she'd turn to me and give me my on-level word. James, your word is cat. Also, one year our class did a spelling bee, and everyone had to participate, and like, I didn't even care that I was the first one out. Hey, that's almost my name. Another thing that I mentioned in a pretty old video is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little. I couldn't pronounce my ahs and I talked like this. I'm good now.
Obviously.
So every other day during school, I had to go to a speech therapy class, and one day the teacher who taught me how to pronounce my ahs, I'll call her Mrs. Kool-Aid, gave me this sheet of paper with a bunch of raindrops on it, and she said, "For every raindrop on this page, say the word raindrop." But then she just left the room, and I said, huh, well, I'm not gonna do this. I didn't say raindrop a single time, because, like, no one was even there. No one would have seen me not saying raindrop. So why would I do something that I didn't want to do? But then, the funny part is, when she came back, she asked, "Are you finished saying your raindrops?"
No.
Well, how many did you say?
I didn't say any.
You stupid child. I told her the truth for some reason. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest lie in my life to get away with, but that's why I remember this story. I'm still mad at myself for telling the truth. And I had to say raindrop a bunch of times in front of her, and she would only go to the next raindrop until I said it right, and it was terrible. It really hurt my feelings. Since I was struggling with reading and spelling, I had to get an IEP. An incredible, excellent personality. Which meant I had to go to a special class for a little bit during school. And the teacher who taught this class was none other than Mrs. Kool-Aid.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why I said it like that. I don't remember anyone ever telling me I was put into a special needs class. I just remember going into speech therapy every other day. And then those classes slowly morphed into teaching me how to read and spell. I don't know, I thought reading this book would have helped me talk better. Two other kids were in the reading class with me, and I remember the day when reading for me just clicked. Us three were given a simple sentence to read. It was about bees. It was so simple. It was literally just, "To defend their hive from wasps, bees don't sting the wasp. Instead, they all crowd around the wasp and flap their wings to raise their body temperature, heating up the wasp until it dies." And then Mrs. Kool-Aid asked us, "Okay, how do bees defend against wasps?" And the other two kids said, "They sting them." And I said, "What? No, you moans! Didn't you weed this?" The words in this paper have meaning when placed in a certain order to convey information. Also, I never want to get hugged by a bee. So I was in these classes all the way until the sixth grade.
I was getting better at reading. I still wasn't great, but I was getting better at it. And one day, Mrs. Kool-Aid said, "You know, James, you should try competing in the Battle of the Books."
Battle of the Books? Battle of the Books?
Battle of the Books!
Finally, reading sounds fun!
At my school, Battle of the Books was this competition where students were given a list of 4 books to read within a time limit of, like, 2 months. I don't remember how long it was. And after however many months it was, the contestants would sit in an auditorium and take turns answering questions about the books. And whoever got the most questions right would get a pizza party. And that's where the battle part comes in. We'd kill each other for pizza. And then there were 2 more rounds, each with 4 more books, so there was a total of 12 books you had to read. And we were allowed to be with a partner, so my partner was TJ.
Hey, TJ, do you remember Battle of the Books?
Yeah, man, it was great.
Now, you're probably thinking that 4 books in 2 months isn't that hard, especially since they're kids' books, but as someone who didn't read any books on my own outside of school, it was a challenge.
But I discovered a way to cheat the system. I discovered something called audiobooks.
Instead of having to sit still and read the book, I could just have someone read the book to me. And I would get through the book so much faster. I'd be able to read a book in about 8 hours as opposed to reading a book never, because I would never be able to finish a book on my own. And I was actually able to understand what was going on. I legitimately thought that listening to audiobooks was cheating because of how well it worked. So I never told anyone my secret. Until just now. Please don't tell anyone. Also, I didn't just turn on an audiobook and start playing video games. No, I sat in my bed next to the CD player and followed along with the book, and sometimes I even took notes. I've wanted to talk about my love for audiobooks for so long, but I can't, because then people will think I'm getting paid by a certain company, but I'm not, and I'll prove it. Instead of wasting your money on quality audiobooks made by professionals, you guys should all check out LibriVox.org, where you can listen to free public domain audiobooks, which means there's only old-timey classical books on it, like Aesop's Fables, which, in my opinion, is all you need. Anyway, TJ and I did the Battle of the Books, and for one of the rounds, TJ was sick, so I had to answer the questions all by myself, and I never forgave him for that. And also, the whole time, I was keeping track of everyone's points, and me and TJ got the most questions right. My math skills are finally being useful. I was already craving the pizza. After the last round, the teacher said, "Okay, I'll tally up all the points and let you all know who the winner is in a couple of weeks." But since I was keeping track of everyone's score, I already knew we won. I turned to TJ and I said, "TJ, guess what? We already..." Oh, this is the round that you were sick on. How did I not notice that until just now? But then a couple of weeks go by and I'm not hearing any news about a pizza party. I was expecting to walk into class one day and there would just be a pile of pizza boxes waiting for me. But that never happened. The teacher in charge of the competition was the librarian. So one day I went up to her and I asked, did you ever say who won the Battle of the Books? Also, my favorite pizza is barbecue chicken. And she said, "Oh, these 2 fifth graders won." So the Battle of the Books was for both 5th and 6th graders. I was a 6th grader, so I went to all the 6th grader battles. But apparently, there was some low-life 5th grader who got every single question right and stole my pizza party! And that taught me a valuable lesson. Even when you work hard, you don't always get what you want in life. But that's okay. Because one day,
you'll be an adult and you can buy all the pizza you want without having to read first!
Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? Wait, didn't we already have this conversation?
Yeah, we did. But we're remaking this conversation with better graphics and Will Smith.
Yeah.
But why would we remake something that's already good on its own when we could be making something totally original?
Because, Ethan, we don't want to take risks, and this will make us more money.
But won't it be obvious to the audience that we're only doing these remakes for the money?
They'll watch it anyways.
I don't want you to think that I think that all sequels and remakes are bad. One of my favorite movies is a spin-off, and I'm very excited for the remake of The Dark Crystal to come out. And if you think I'm going to make a video talking about it when it comes out, you are absolutely correct. So Disney is remaking a bunch of classical movies into live action. They did it with Tarzan, Alice in Wonderland, and they did it with 101 Dalmatians twice. And as someone who enjoys cartoons a little too much, I think it would be cool if they remade Treasure Planet or Atlantis into live action. Both of those movies are underrated and have a lot of high-stake action-packed adventure that would be perfect for a reboot. And if they did get a reboot, it would introduce a new generation of kids to these awesome movies.
But that's just my opinion. I'm sure Disney has good reasons for making sequels and spin-offs. Speaking of Disney sequels, I bet some of you forgot the very old straight-to-VHS Disney sequels. I try to forget about them every day. You can have your own opinion on the Disney sequels, but all the ones that went straight to VHS are terrible. Even The Lion King 2? That one emo lion was kinda hot. Did I stutter? I know all those sequels were technically done by a different studio, but let's just hope that Disney will finally break the bad sequel streak with Frozen 2. Or they should just let it go straight to VHS. Some franchises like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings have long overarching stories that are designed to have multiple installments, and as long as the studio doesn't stretch out one book into three movies, then those types of movies are absolutely fine. But I don't want to talk about those movies. I want to talk about sequels to standalone films. Now, I believe that a sequel to a standalone film can be done, but it's a delicate process. Because in the first movie, you establish the characters and the world they live in, then the protagonist has to overcome a problem, usually defeating a villain, and then the characters live happily ever after, and the story is all wrapped up nicely with a bow, and just what a nice story we got there. I'm just gonna set it down and watch it from time to time and not change it one bit. But then a sequel comes along and says, oh, you thought the characters lived happily ever after? And then rips off the nice bow and says there's another more evil villain who wasn't mentioned in the first movie for some reason. If a sequel turns out bad, it can devalue the original movie. There's a reason we don't talk about Atlantis 2 or Pocahontas 2. Or Mulan 2, or Hunchback 2, or Aladdin 2, or Cinderella 2, or Beauty and the Beast 2, or Tarzan 2. Because they didn't happen. So that's why I'm always impressed whenever a good sequel is made. And a studio that I think does an amazing job at making sequels is called DreamWorks. But I've noticed a pattern with DreamWorks franchises that I've coined the DreamWorks Treequel Paradox. I think the right word might be trilogy, but I'm just going to say treequel. You see, DreamWorks has a track record of creating amazing sequels, but pretty subpar treequels. Here's what I mean. Now, keep in mind that these are not my opinion. These reviews are objectively correct facts. And also, I just want to say I know that these movies are kids' movies, but I like animated movies more than real ones. And I'm a cartoon character, so Shrek 1. Great movie, great characters, great message, 10 onion layers out of 10. Shrek 2, it's the first movie in history to be better than the original, and it created the best music video of all time. I need 11 heroes out of 10. Shrek 3?
Not in my swamp.
Okay, I know we might not all agree, but here's another example. Kung Fu Panda 1, perfect movie. Any movie with anthropomorphic animals is always a win in my book. I think we have a best-selling franchise on our panda paws. Kung Fu Panda 2, just as good as the original. How many sequels have an animated bird as a villain? Besides Stuart Little 2. So far, we got 10s across the board, but then Kung Fu Panda 3 comes along and... I'm sorry, Jablinski, I just wasn't feeling this one. Which is why I was so worried for How to Train Your Dragon 3, and let's just say the DreamWorks Treequel Paradox didn't break its trend. However, there's one franchise that doesn't follow the DreamWorks Treequel Paradox, and it haunts my dreams, works. And that franchise is Madagascar. I remember loving this movie as a kid, and apparently I wasn't the only kid who enjoyed it, because it made $193,595,521. So DreamWorks made two more of these movies, and created The Thing That Haunts My Dreams. Now, personally, I don't really care for these movies. They're fine. I haven't rewatched them at all, so 5 out of 10. But there's another movie in this franchise. A movie that shouldn't be as good as it is, and honestly, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that it might make the list of my top 5 favorite movies. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie, so I'm gonna be the one who breaks the ice. That metaphor is relevant because we're talking about Penguins of Madagascar. Penguins of Madagascar is the best movie that features penguins ever. Better than Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2, and it's 1,000 times more realistic than March of the Penguins. There's a scene where the penguins fall off an airplane and go hopping from one airplane to another. It's so entertaining, and it's all done in one continuous camera shot, so I'm not talking with a hint of irony when I say that this scene is a cinematic masterpiece. I don't remember when I first watched Penguins of Madagascar. It came out when I was 18, so I'm probably not the target demographic. But I remember after watching it thinking,
wow, that's a good movie.
And I didn't think about that movie again until years later on Halloween night 2018. I was in a Discord call with some friends who were also spending their Halloween night behind a computer, and naturally we were discussing which Madagascar sequel was better. Some people actually liked the second one, which was surprising, and I said,
Well, no matter what you think of the sequels, at least we can all agree that Penguins of Madagascar is better than both of them, right? And everyone in the call was like, what are you talking about? And instead of watching a scary movie that Halloween night, we all virtually watched a movie about penguins together, and I think everyone liked it. Okay, let's talk about another studio, Pixar. Pixar movies do a good job at appealing to a wide audience. Kids like them because they're a cartoon, and adults like them because of their heavy themes like old people dying. Almost every movie Pixar has made has been a cinematic classic. Penguins of Madagascar, however, is not one of those emotionally inducing movies. It doesn't teach a thought-provoking life lesson. It's an hour and a half of penguins fighting an octopus, and I love it. Every morning when I watch Penguins of Madagascar, I feel like a kid again. I am jealous of the writing in this movie. Okay, there's one fart joke, but that's my only complaint. Now, do I think Penguins is better than all of these Pixar movies? No, definitely not. But I do think this movie is really good, and IMDb gave it a 6.7 when it clearly deserves a 10. I don't know if this video convinced you to watch Penguins of Madagascar, but if you're retroactively looking for the next summer blockbuster movie to watch, then it's got my recommendation. James, are you being sponsored by Penguins? I wish. There wasn't really a point to this video, I just wanted an excuse to talk about my favorite DreamWorks spinoff. So, in conclusion, I'm really excited for The Dark Crystal 2 coming out on Netflix. The show's being released on August 30th, which is coincidentally this channel's 5-year anniversary. So don't expect me to work that day.
Welcome to the Warrior Cat Wing of the Animation History Museum. I will be guiding your tour today. I hope you have nothing else planned.
Warrior Cats is a book series that follows a society of feral cats who live in these groups that are kind of a mix between a gang and a cult. While they are considered kids' books, I will say Warrior Cats is less fun time happy cat adventures and more Watership Down. We won't be getting too graphic here, but a lot of the cats don't make it. Now, you might be wondering why these books have their own dedicated wing in the Animation History Museum. These are letters, not pictures, stupid. Well, you see, this fan base has the most animated fan base ever. Yes, even more than that one you really like. People love to draw these cats. Coming up is one of my favorite pieces. The artist's use of anime hair and Windows Movie Maker transitions perfectly encapsulates that indescribable era of 2009. And I especially love the artist's bold choice of including their OC into this piece, really calling to the essence of the human experience and that desire to rescue a villain who is also your comfort character. Something you need to understand is that kids who are now adults have been drawing these cats for quite some time. We have records of kids drawing these cats all the way back in 2004. And if you were a Warrior Cat fan during the 2008 housing market crash, then you were eating extremely well, not with food, but with edgy cat animations drawn entirely by a mouse. Fans were making anime openings, AMVs, and graphic depictions of some of the more Watership Down moments in the series. I'm blurring these out because mutilated cats bum me out. And just like the books that are still coming out, the Warriors never stopped drawing. I don't want to sound dramatic, but you could spend the rest of your life watching nothing but Warrior Cat fan animations and still not have seen them all. I actually haven't done the math on that yet, but trust me, there's a lot.
Is this playlist still going?
I have been fully aware of the vast quantity of Warrior Cat fan animations for quite some time. Heck, I've even hired some of them. But I've never been able to truly enjoy a Warrior Cat fan animation, as I've never read these books growing up, because all the kids in my class who did pretended to be the cats during recess and would hiss at me whenever I tried talking to them, which even back then I was like, okay, this is a little weird, guys. But I regret not reading these books growing up, because now I'm left with all these unanswered questions. Why are so many people drawn to drawing these fictional cats? What are these feelings stirring in my bosom as I watch these? And why do the art styles change so much? As we move down the Warrior Cat fan animation timeline, around 2012 is when the Warriors really begin to specialize in multi-animator projects. Basically, there were so many people willing to draw these cats that a large group of them all worked together, each animating a different segment of a video, and then when everyone's segment gets done in 14 months, the finished segments get stitched together into one complete video.
I guarantee you've seen at least one of these group reanimator projects before, and you might have the Warriors to thank for that. I don't know who started the trend. Maps work out great for everyone, because now you and 40 of your animation buddies only have to animate a few seconds of a cat fight, and we get to watch a super engaging music video with changing art styles every 6 seconds. I really have to commend everyone who puts these projects together, especially the ones that were done before messaging apps like Discord even existed. But what I find extremely impressive is that everyone who signs up for these projects are doing so simply for exposure. No one involved expects any type of monetary compensation, and Warrior maps are very often made to copyrighted music, meaning no one's making money off these projects anyways. I can only imagine what musicians must go through when their manager tells them, "You're not gonna believe this! Someone just made a fan-animated music video of your song on YouTube!" And then the artist goes to watch it, and they just see a bunch of cartoon cats fighting each other. Violently. Can I tell you a quick story time? Once I wandered into a Barnes & Noble and thought, I wonder if they have any physical copies of Warrior Cats, because that is something I am willing to buy. So I went to the young adult section, looked under W, and found nothing. They didn't have any. Well, that's too bad, I thought. I mean, between the main books, graphic novels, and super editions, there's only over 100 different books with new ones still being written to this day, but I guess this BNN doesn't have any. Oh well. But then I had the disturbing realization that I might be looking in the wrong place. I was looking in the young adult section. I needed to extend my search to the kids' corner, spelled with a Z. So I gingerly walked from the kid book section to the little kid book section, trying to find the book I was currently reading. And there, next to the barn built into the wall and the blocks, were the Warriors. I'm not going to judge you on whatever books you like to read, because I live in a glass house. If I was ever going to understand what made people so drawn to drawing these violent feral kitty cats, then I would have to start reading these. So, whether you never read these books but are curious to know why so many people are drawing the characters, or maybe you did read these books a long time ago and want a refresher from the perspective of an adult who didn't grow up with them. Either way, get your favorite cat treat and knock something off a counter as we dive paws first into the wild and wonderful world of Warrior Cats. So, spoiler warning for Warrior Cats. Our main protagonist is Rusty, a handsome ginger Tom. Those are not my words. That is how he's described in the character description at the front of the book. Ignore that he's called Firepaw right now. Firepaw and Rusty are the same cat. It'll make sense in a little bit. Rusty is a regular house cat living with people, or as he would call them, two legs. You see, cats have some pretty unique slurs for everyday normal human things. This isn't a car driving on a road. It's a monster on the Thunderpath. Personally, I love it when books explain everyday, mundane human things from, like, a non-human perspective. Like, yeah, a car would be a monster to a cat. It merges without using a turn signal. Now, our main cat, Rusty, grows tired of his soft kitty pet life and thinks maybe living in the forest directly behind his backyard would sorta kinda be cool. But he's not ready for a big life change just yet. But then one day, Rusty's only friend in the entire world named Smudge, he tells Rusty, "Hey, did you know when our owners take us to the vet, they chop our guys off?" Fellas, would you spend the rest of your life surviving in the woods if it meant you got to keep both of your dudes? I would. So, like many other unneutered male cats, Rusty abandons his soft kitty pet life and sets out to start a new, wild and free life in the forest directly behind his backyard. It turns out there's a whole society of wild feral kitty cats living in the forest behind Rusty's backyard, and they've divided themselves into four distinct groups, or clans. The first clan we're going to be looking at is Thunder Clan. This is the clan our protagonists belong to and where most of the story takes place. These cats are the moral, compassionate, brave ones. Gryffindor. The next clan is Shadow Clan. These are the edgy, evil cats. Slytherin. Sure, there's evil cats in every clan, but a lot of them are from Shadow Clan, especially in Season 1. Because they have Shadow in the name, I always imagined every cat here was just a black Halloween cat. The next clan is River Clan. Their main thing is... they swim. I wouldn't call them Ravenclaw because they're not smart. They're more of a water tribe. And the next clan is Wind Clan, but you don't need to worry. They're Hufflepuffs, so... Cats from different clans hate each other and are super territorial. Don't even think about falling in love and starting a family with a cat from a different clan. That is so unaccepted, it happens constantly. And those are the four clans in the forest. However, there's one clan not in the forest we need to talk about called... Star Clan. Ooh. Did you know cats have their own religion? Your childhood cat isn't going to be kicking it with you in boring old two-leg heaven. They're going to be sharing tongues with their ancestors in Star Clan. Sharing tongues is like when cats lick each other, like, you know, normal cat behavior. But whenever I read sharing tongues, I always thought they were like French kissing or something. Star Clan is basically warrior cat heaven. And it's so much more than a character looking up at the night sky and seeing their deceased dad in the clouds. Instead, Star Clan plays a much bigger role in the books, and we get to frequently visit and see what wacky antics the Cat Angels get up to. So even though there is a lot of death in Warrior Cats, just because a cat dies doesn't mean it's the last we'll ever see of them. They'll just be in their angel form from now on. And those are the five clans you need to know about. It's just those four main ones and Warrior Cat Heaven. There's not going to be, like, a secret sixth clan or anything. Now, normally, forest cats are super big on cat purity and would never allow this random outsider into their clan. But you see, the leader of Thunder Clan, named Blue Star, she had a pretty good reason to allow this handsome Ginger Tom into the clan. Blue Star, you know, kinda thought he was the chosen one. And he canonically still had both of his guys, so. Prophecies play a very big role in the wild world of warrior cats. And the first prophecy we hear about is fire alone will save the clan. So knowing that fire alone will save the clan, Blue Star sees this handsome Ginger Tom just wandering through the forest and officially accepts him into Thunder Clan, bestowing him the new name, Fire Paw. See, that's why the front of the book called him Fire Paw, remember? Now it's making sense. So completely remove the name Rusty from your brain. That's never coming back. Everyone who's read these books knows this cat as Fire Paw. He's got a paw of fire. By this point, you've probably noticed a pretty unique formula to some of these cat names. Blue Star? Fire Paw? Let's take a look at some of these other characters, shall we? Let's see, we got Ashfur, Mousefur, Leopardfur, Frostfur, Russetfur, Oakfur, Brackenfur, Sootfur, Ashfur again? Okay, what the fur is going on? What's with all these war- If you are not privy to the naming convention of these warrior cat characters, the nomenclature of these cat names follows a simple two-part system. Every cat's name is made up of any of these prefixes and any of these suffixes. Can you see that? Graypaw, White Storm, Blue Star. Every name is like this. Mountain Dew is a valid warrior cat name. Now, I already knew about these ridiculous double-syllable names going into the series, and I was legitimately worried it would be impossible for me to keep track and remember all of these cat names. But do you want to know something I didn't know going into this series? Their name changes. When I got to the first name-changing ceremony, I threw the book down thinking, I'm not smart enough to understand the complexities of warrior cats. I should just give up. But then I thought, no. If a 9-year-old child in 2008 can remember all these ridiculous cat names, then so can I. And then I got to one of the many kit birthing scenes, and all the cats would go, oh boy, more warriors for ThunderClan. Everyone welcome Ice Kit and Fox Kit. And I would go...
I hope Ice Kid and Fox Kid die.
But I must say, once you really get into this series, remembering all the different cat names isn't that big of an issue. First of all, sometimes the cat's name will just be a short description of what they physically look like, ergo make them easier to remember.
What do you think running nose looks like? What do you think spider legs looks like? I don't know what mouse fur looks like, but in my head, she's always wearing like a mouse costume. And just everyone, no one addresses it. They're just like, that's mouse fur. What's really bad is that there's like mouse fur and then mouse kit like in the same scene. And it's like, what are we doing here, Aaron? And as strange as these names sound, there's actually a methodology to them that correlates to what rank a cat is. Kittens will always have the suffix kit. You read the sentence, ice kit and fox kit were playing in the hollow. You don't have to worry about them. They don't matter. Apprentices will always have the suffix paw, because they're apprentices. Fire paw and gray paw are both apprentices. And anything above them is when the warrior names get a little more creative and don't have a set suffix, except for the very top, the leaders, which always have the name star. Which means you have to be careful reading the wiki, because sometimes learning a cat's up-to-date name is a spoiler. Now, instead of having to remember gray stripe, blue star, white storm, all you really have to remember is gray, blue, white. And while we're looking at the clan hierarchy, can I just talk about medicine cats real quick? Medicine cats are responsible for healing the sick and injured clanmates, and they don't use, like, medicine. All of their healing comes from herbs found locally in the forest, but I always felt like the books were stretching some of the healing properties they claimed these herbs possessed. Okay, the cats are constantly getting into fights, so they're getting scratches, and the med cats would put cobwebs over wounds. Okay, I can sort of see that working as like a natural band-aid. But then during one of the many kit birthing scenes, the med cats would be like, oh no! Give her a poppy seed to calm her down! And I was always like, a singular poppy seed? Like, from a bagel? At least give her, like, a couple.
So back in the forest, Rusty meets all the other apprentices in ThunderClan. And one apprentice confides in our hero some terrible news. He secretly witnessed this other cat named Tigerclaw murder another cat in his own clan.
Tigerclaw is here, and he murdered the cat here. The deputy, because deputies of a clan are next in line to be leader, so he couldn't just murder the leader, he has to murder the deputy so he could be deputy, and then he can murder the leader. Do you understand? Good. Okay, cool.
I just want to point out that I got this corkboard off Facebook Marketplace, and the pictures did not show how badly sun damaged it was.
So immediately, this series sets up Tigerclaw as the main bad guy of the story. That he's willing to murder cats in his own clan to become leader. And getting to become the leader of a clan is a very enticing idea to Tigerclaw, because leaders get blessed by StarClan with 9 lives. Every other cat only gets 1 life, but the leaders get to die 8 extra times.
And I really like this plot device, because as the series goes on, we get to keep track of how many times a leader loses a life, and the suspense builds and builds as we get closer to that final one. Now, our heroes kinda do everything in their power not to tell anyone that Tigerclaw is the bad guy. Like, there's seriously a scene where Firepaw gets a one-on-one training session with Blue Star, and he's like, I should probably tell the leader of my clan about the broad-shoulder backstabbing murderer named Tigerclaw in the clan. But then Blue Star's like, fight me! And then he gets caught up into fighting, and then he just forgets to tell her. Okay. So just like the other characters, we're gonna keep the thought of Tigerclaw being the main bad guy in the back of our mind, because we got more important stuff to worry about. Shadow Clan just attacked Thunder Clan for no reason. Oh, fuck! And they end up killing Firepaw's secret crush, who he barely talked to and was way older than him and practiced celibacy.
The Thundercats and Shadowcats face off in a big epic battle, and eventually the heroic Thundercats defeat the evil Shadowcats.
And as the first episode comes to a close, Blue Star promotes Firepaw to the warrior class.
Firepaw's new warrior name is Fireheart.
Alright, that's now 2 times our protagonist has changed names in 1 book.
Now that Fireheart is officially a warrior, I would like to take a quick palate-cleansing break from the wild world of Warrior Cats, because I would feel extremely remiss if I didn't share with you all a rather humorous story time about an instance where I, too, was trying to become a warrior.
So when I was deep into reading these books, I went to this boxing gym because I was training for nothing, apparently. And on my drive to said boxing gym, I would listen to the Warriors. It helped me get into the right headspace, I guess. Now, the way the parking lot at this gym worked was that sometimes you'd park your car in front of another car, and then you would give your keys to the receptionist guy at the front, and he would move your car for you. Totally fine, totally cool, except for the one time I made the mistake of leaving my phone in the car, a phone that would auto-connect and immediately play the last thing I was listening to if said car were to turn on. At any given moment, I'd like to think my social interaction skills are at a 7 out of 10. Pretty good, but still room for improvement. In the middle of a boxing class, I'm covered in sweat, I got stink lines coming off me, now I'm at a 6 out of 10. But when the boxing gym receptionist comes up to me and says, "Hey man, you left your phone in your car. By the way, love the book you're reading." Whoosh! Now I'm at a 0. I've talked to this receptionist before, and he knew I did YouTube, so I tried desperately to explain myself. "Oh, you know, I'm going to make a video about it. Plus, I wanted to read more this year." And then he asks, "Are you going to mention
the movie?"
I was cut off by this. I knew there wasn't a Warrior Cats movie, but I was absolutely not going to argue about it with the boxing gym receptionist in front of a bunch of dudes punching each other. So I just went, "There's a movie?" And he goes, "Yeah, there's a movie." And the way he said, "Yeah, there's a movie," made it sound like I was the dumb one for not knowing about the Warrior Cats movie. And I forget exactly what I said after that, but it was probably along the lines of, "Could someone please punch me so I no longer have to be in this conversation?" And for the whole rest of the class, I could not fathom why that guy was so positive about the existence of a movie that definitely didn't exist. Did he see someone reenact the entire book with Littlest Pet Shop Dolls and think that was a movie?
I'm sure gonna miss you, Ravenpaw. Why don't we share tongues one last time?
It wasn't until I got back to my car when things started to click. When I turned my car on and connected my phone, the little dashboard screen thingy didn't say, "Now playing Warriors, The New Prophecy, Episode 5. All it said was, "Now playing Twilight." So he thinks I was reading that, and I don't know which is worse.
So diving paws first back into the wild world of Warrior Cats, Fireheart's best bro for life, who is now named
Graystripe,
starts being a little horn cat. It's like horn dog, but it's a horn cat. He's being a little frisky boy.
You see, it all started when Graystripe accidentally fell into a river and was rescued by a cat in River Clan. And these two cats from different clans immediately hit it off. But this will just be the first example of one of the many universal truths about Warrior Cats. All it takes for two characters to fall deeply in love with each other is if they ever appear in a scene together. And that's especially true for cats from different clans. Something about betraying your whole clan is sexy, I guess. Meow.
Fireheart keeps his best bro's forbidden relationship a secret when all of a sudden,
she's pregnant? And she's having the kits now? Graystripe's gonna be a dad? Graystripe's girlfriend doesn't make it through kit birth, but luckily, her kids do. We have the boy one and the girl one. You don't have to worry about them ever again. This leaf blower is killing me. What do I do? What do I do about this leaf blower? Do I ask him to stop?
After this scene, Graystripe's forbidden relationship made a lot more sense to me. It felt rushed and contrived because this was never a love story. It was an I got the River Clan leader's daughter pregnant who then died in kit birth story. A classic tale for all children's books. This death was the first in the series that made me go, "Whoa, Warrior cats don't mess around. Who kills off the pregnant girlfriend? And then Graystripe tries living in RiverClan for a bit, but that ultimately falls through, so he doesn't get to live there anymore, and he never gets to see his two kids grow up. Well, his first two kids.
While Graystripe was going behind everyone's back to visit his RiverClan girlfriend, Fireheart was going behind everyone's back to visit his biological sister at her two-legs nest. And she tells him, "You know, you're making the idea of living in the forest sound totally cool and awesome. I don't want to completely uproot my life, though, so could you take one of my kids away and force him to live with you?"
This is Cloudtail, Fireheart's sister's son. The books never call this white cat Fireheart's nephew. They always called him his sister's kit, sister's son, or sister's firstborn.
Now, this could just be because cats are quirky with words and don't have a name to describe the relationship of your sister's son. But the more the books kept avoiding ever using the word nephew, the more I started to worry that nephew was too big of a word for this reading level. But then the books throw the word jubilant at you? You're not going to use nephew, but jubilant's fine? You seriously going to make me pull out a dictionary, Warrior Cat? Since Cloudtail was thrown into clan life kind of against his will, he doesn't super respect the strict set of rules all the clan cats follow. And he's an atheist. Just doesn't believe in Star Clan, like, at all. That detail never really comes up, but the books let you know that he is one. It's super important that you know the religious views of these cats, okay? Cloudtail ends up getting captured by Two Legs, and now it's up to his mother's brother to rescue him. When this scene was first introduced, I got super excited, because by now, so much of the drama in this series has been cats fighting over prey, cats fighting over territory, and cats fighting over love. So when the opportunity of a Rescue My Sister's Son heist was introduced, I was excited just for something different. Fireheart's going to have to navigate through a two-leg nest he's never been in before and describe all the mundane human things he sees from his non-human cat perspective. What is this strange hissing elephant? I love it when books do that kind of stuff. But while I was thinking of all the interesting possibilities, Fireheart just opens the front door and Cloudtail escapes. He never even goes inside. Cool. Glad you're back, Cloudtail. You're going to follow the strict set of rules, but still be an atheist? No, that's fine. Yeah, I think I saw some fresh kill we could hunt back there. Once our heroes were finally done dealing with their atheist nephew and pregnant girlfriend, they finally came to their senses and told the leader Blue Star about the murderous, broad-shouldered Tiger Claw in the clan.
And it actually got to a point where I started to question if Tiger Claw really was the main bad guy.
Now, this might just be because I watch too many movies, but when something tries this hard to tell me he's the main bad guy, especially this early on in the story, I start to think, yeah, I can smell this plot twist coming from a mile away. Fireheart never had any proof Tiger Claw was evil. He was just blindly believing what this other random apprentice was saying. Tiger Claw was there when Cinderpelt got her legs run over, but we don't know for sure he caused the accident. How does a cat even orchestrate something like that? Yeah, he might be constantly giving off bad vibes, but that's just all part of the misdirection. I'm telling ya, there's enough wiggle room here for this cat to actually be the misunderstood good guy. But it turns out, no. He is evil and he did all those evil things.
Tiger Claw, what is this?
Blue Star's meow is sharper now, edged with anger, not fear.
I'm the leader of your clan. I'm the leader of your clan.
Or have you forgotten that?
Not for much longer, Tiger Claw growled. I'm going to kill you, and kill you again, as many times as it takes for you to join Star Clan forever.
It wasn't until I read that exact line when I started to think, okay, Tiger Claw is for sure the main bad guy. I thought it was ambiguous this whole time. But no, he's the bad guy. He's bad.
So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain, making Tiger Claw, at least for me, an untwisted twist villain.
So Tiger Claw is exiled from the camp. And since Blue Star no longer trusts anyone else in the camp, except for Fireheart, she promotes him to clan deputy. Meaning, at the start of the series, Fireheart was here, below everyone in the clan, and by the end of episode 3, he's already here. Second in command. Next in line to be leader.
But the cherry on top, this terrible news cake, is that our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, isn't done doing main bad guy things. Shadow Clan just made some pretty significant changes to the clan hierarchy.
Our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, who was the biggest proponent of cat purity, by the way, switches teams and becomes the new leader of Shadow Clan.
He finally got his wish of becoming leader and getting 9 lives. We're dealing with Tiger Star now. Then Tiger Star sets a pack of wild dogs loose in the ThunderClan camp, and they end up killing random background characters.
It's one of those wild feral dogs that kill cats and tear off faces. Oh, it's so the horror. I'm getting attacked by a dog. Ah! Oh, wait, I'm wearing makeup. Maybe you should.
The dogs chase Fireheart off a cliff and into some rushing water, and right as the light begins to fade from his eyes, Blue Star swoops in and rescues him.
But I guess that used up the last of her energy because, in a horrible twist of fate, she's now dying. And it's her last life, by the way. I've been keeping track.
This one's for you, Blue Star.
Okay, so she's out of the picture. Fireheart, the current clan deputy, becomes the new leader of ThunderClan. Which also means he's going to change name.
His new name is Firestar. All right? It's not Fireheart or Firepaw, and it's certainly not Rusty. This is Firestar. This will be the last time that he changes names. It's physically impossible for him to change names again.
Unfortunately, this moment was spoiled for me. I always knew that Rusty would be the leader of ThunderClan because while I was researching this video, I remembered this classic fan animation I saw ages ago about Fireheart not liking waffles.
Oh, waffle time, it's waffle time. Will you have some waffle of mine?
So I watched this video again for entirely research purposes and was horrified to see the video was actually called Firestar Doesn't Like Waffles. This video was a pretty big spoiler for me. So Tiger Star and Firestar are now both topped to the nine's new lives. If we're ever going to defeat Tiger Star, he's going to have to be eliminated 9 times. Voldemort only needed 8 times. It's going to be a race of cat and cat to see who will be the last cat to lose their final life. And with the amount of books that are still in this series, I could see their rivalry lasting a really, really long time. Until this series goes in a direction that I think I should mention spoiler warning again, because wow. If you're at all familiar with this story and know what's about to happen, I bet you've just been dying for me to get to this part. To help accomplish his destroy Firestar by any means necessary plan, Tiger Star teams up with Blood Clan? Here's my mood board for the secret 6th clan that's been here this whole time. These are the extremely tough city cats. They live in the city that we've never heard of before. They don't have strange double syllable names or believe in a star clan, but they still call themselves a clan and have a clan leader for some reason. The leader of Blood Clan is Tiny. He's this tiny little black cat that wears a dog teeth collar, and he's a fan favorite. That's what all of this has been building up. You see? Scourge, Scourge, Scourge. I'm Scourge. I already pointed at myself. I know I've been doing a lot of Harry Potter references throughout this video, but I don't think there's a single Harry Potter character that best encompasses who this cat is. I think the best fictional character I could make a comparison to is Shadow the Hedgehog. So how are they going to fight 2 evil clans that formed an alliance? Well, the thing is, Tiny Little Scourge betrays Tiger Star and murders him in front of everyone. But that's okay. He's got 9 lives, remember? Wait, what's happening? Again, the massive tabby's body grew still for a heartbeat, but again the wound was too terrible to yield to the healing trance. His claws tore up clumps of grass in his agony, while his screeches turned from fury to terror. This is a kid's book.
He's dying 9 times, holy sh**, said Firestar.
Tiny little Scourge kills Tigerstar so badly that he dies, resurrects, and then dies again 9 times. So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain. They got me twice.
Initially, I was in denial. No, Tigerstar canonically had 9 lives. He can't die instantly to a cat we just met. This scene had me so flabbergasted that I had to reach out to someone. And everyone I talked to about it was always like, oh, you mean Scourge? I love Scourge. Scourge is so cool. And then I thought, okay, if this cat is so beloved, I should at least give him a chance. Maybe this whole time, the books were actually setting up how evil and ruthless this Scourge guy is. You thought that cat was the main bad guy? This new guy just killed him with barely any effort. This also sets up that Firestar's brand new 9 lives are essentially worthless because this new cat can just kill you and have you instantly burn through all 9 of them. Well, not instantly. Slow and painfully. Which is definitely worse.
All right. It's a little unconventional, but if this is how the series sets up the actual main bad guy, then let's do it. Scourge, you've won me over.
When Scourge and Firestar face off for control over the whole forest, Scourge very easily kills Firestar, because of course he does. Firestar is just a random kitty pet who stumbled his way up the clan hierarchy. And this is Scourge. Ultimate life form Scourge.
Firestar
dies. Except this time, when Scourge kills a clan leader, he only loses once. One life. He only dies once. Because of the power of friendship or something. I think it's a metaphor for Jesus, actually. And I'm not making that up. Unlike Tigerstar, Firestar successfully... I'm sorry, fellas. I'm keeping you away from your, like, friends and family. Firestar successfully resurrects, and Scourge is very understandably caught off guard by this because he's never seen a cat do that before. So this time when they face off, it goes a little like this. And that's how season 1 of Warrior Cats ends. As you know, we frequently get to visit and see what wacky antics the cat angels get up to in Cat Heaven. And while Tigerstar's ghost makes a pretty prevalent comeback, basically becoming the new Cat Satan, we never get to see Scourge or his spiky collar ever again. How is a cat who only shows up in this much of the story, kills the main bad guy, and then leaves and never comes back this beloved? It's because he's the ultimate life form, baby. If the only knowledge of warrior cats you have is from what I've told you in this video, while you do know more than the average person about warrior cats, you're still probably not going to understand what most of these fan animations are really about, because we only looked at 6 books out of like 100, and you don't know what the characters actually look like. I've just been showing you Garfield characters. However, my dear viewer, I really wanted to get the full Warrior Cat experience. So I read season 4. This is 4. Shit. I've read season 2, season 3, and season 4. Really just trying to get the full Warrior Cat experience. Season 4 seemed like a good stopping point. I also forgot to mention, I read the Super Editions too. It was like 27 books. 27 books. I've read 27 books this year. Get on my level. I didn't want to do all of them. I'm not crazy, okay? I'm in a padded room. I'm not crazy. So, with me as your local Warrior Cat expert, I can safely say I still have no clue what most of these fan animations are about. It's not my fault that I don't understand these. Most of the things that these people are animating aren't even canon. They've just been animating fan fiction this whole time. Cleopatra takes a character who's not even that prevalent and imagines her as an Egyptian sphinx cat
who has, like, no ties to Egypt at all in the books. Next up forever, what if Firestar and Scourge switched lives? And Firestar was the one with the spiky collar. Holyfawn, all right, this one's got a giant snake monster in it. Mr. Fear asks the question, what if there was a zombie outbreak in Warrior Cats? Scavengers of the Wind, this one's also got a zombie theme going on and is genuinely the most terrifying Warrior Cat animation I've ever seen. I was legit watching this on my TV and I had to turn it off halfway through because it was so terrifying. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It took me reading almost 30 books to finally understand that Warrior Cat fan animations aren't meant to be understood. It seems like people just like drawing cats. But why is that?
Now, I actually have 5 different reasons why I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats. And the first reason is because cats are just fun to draw. Think about it this way. Would you rather spend years studying human anatomy, toiling away for hours trying to get the fingers right, or would you rather just draw a dumb little cat with a new woo face? Reason number 2 is the expansive world. This is the official Warrior Cats family tree. There's quite a few characters that I skipped over. I once heard someone describe Warrior Cats as Game of Thrones for kids, and while I've never seen or read any Game of Thrones, I totally agree with that sentiment. It's even got the incest and everything. Since there are so many characters and little mini-adventures, it's very easy for someone to have a favorite character or moment that they can connect with, regardless of how prevalent they are in the story. And the third reason I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats is the lack of official art at the time. These days, Warrior Cat fans have official graphic novels that they get to look at, and I do own them, but I keep lending them out to people, so that's my bad. But in the early 2010s, all fans had to go off of were words and their imaginations, which I think made people more inclined to draw out their favorite moments in the series, regardless of how graphic and gory they were. In fact, the kids really like drawing the graphic and gory stuff. That's a conversation for another time. The fourth reason I think people like drawing these cats is how this series is perfectly set up to be a fandom.
Is that what it says?
Perfectly. That's hilarious. Creating your own Warrior Cat OC with a tragic backstory and a unique double-syllable name is not only very easy to do, but it's actually encouraged by the books themselves. At the back of some of these books is this, like, fully plotted out Warrior Cat D&D campaign inviting readers to pretend to be the cats. I always thought the kids during recess who pretended to be the cats were just very devoted fans, but they were just following the instructions the books clearly laid out for them. And the last reason I think people like drawing these cats is because their passion is infectious. I highly recommend you go down the same Warrior Cat fan animation rabbit hole that I did, because what you'll find is thousands of dedicated fans all creating art of their favorite book series. And they're not doing it for money or for views, but because they're passionate. And there's also, like, a bunch of videos that are over 15 years old, and that just makes me nostalgic for that early era of YouTube. I went into this video trying to understand what it was about this series that made people want to draw the cats, but the funny thing is, I ended up drawing these cats too. It's a virus. These cats are so drawable. I initially got my start online creating webcomics. It's something I enjoy doing. I love thinking of a joke, doodling it out, and sharing it with the world. That's my passion. And I guess seeing all of these passionate artists creating these fan animations looked like a whole lot of fun. And the fact that the main character is a ginger male cat, come on, that's just too perfect of an opportunity to do a Garfield reference. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. So me and my team created 40 Garfield-inspired Warrior Cat webcomics, and we posted them every Wednesday. And even though we didn't make any money off of them, I really enjoyed making them and posting them every Wednesday. And not to get too vulnerable here, I know these are just Garfield comics, but they really helped me find my passion in creating art again. So thank you all for reading them. I hope you enjoyed. So if you're someone that's missing a little passion in your life, try watching hours of Warrior Cat fan animations. They're a whole ton of fun to watch. They do get a little violent at times, so, you know, be aware of that. And if you're someone that's ever produced a Warrior Cat fan animation, thank you for inspiring others to follow their passions. And if anyone on the Aaron Hunter team is watching, I hope you know you've made a lot of kids furries. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you all for watching. Have a good night, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you all for joining me in this deep dive into the wild world of Warrior Cats. I know this is a pretty different video than I usually post. I had my face in it for a lot more than I usually do, but this video still took a long time to make because I read all of these books, and there was a period of time where I thought I could talk about all four seasons of Warrior Cats, but then the script was just way too long, and I thought season one was good enough on its own to be its own dedicated video. If you like this video, let me know, and I can do more Warrior Cat videos. Thank you all for watching. I hope you enjoyed, and wear your seatbelt.
And now, for the moment you've all been waiting for. Da, di da 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 da di da di da da di 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 da. This is not clickbait. I don't clickbait. You can ask my friends. So, surprise everyone. You're about to get so much Odd Ones content this year. I've been contractually obligated to keep this a secret from you for a long time now, but today's the day I'm finally allowed to tell you that we're making a Netflix show. We, meaning the entire team of amazing and talented people who worked on this show in every department, who consistently improved the quality with everything they did. This project would not have been possible without everyone's amazing work, so thank you. Oh, and speaking of amazing teams, give it up for the YouTube team who's been working hard on these videos while I've been busy on this. It takes a village to raise a child and make a season of a cartoon show. How did this all happen, I hear you ask? Well, it all started when I partnered up with a television writer named Ethan Banville, and together we came up with a show about a boy who looks and sounds and is named after me, and a crocodile.
A crocodile? You mean like the one that was in your music video, Life is Fun? Have you been working on this since 2018?
Oh, no, no, no.
I mean, kind of. We pitched the show to Netflix in early 2020, but we didn't get the green light until August of 2020. So that means the entire production has been done in lockdown. All the writing, the storyboarding, the designing, the voice acting has been done with little to no human interaction. I still have yet to work in an office. I just want to lean against a water cooler and say things like, "Yo, did you catch the game last night? Is that too much to ask?" And before I go, I just wanted to thank all of you for watching my videos. I've always wanted to entertain people with cartoons, and without you watching these cartoons and supporting me, I wouldn't have had this amazing opportunity. I'm sure you're all dying to see what the team's been working on, but you'll have to wait. I will be going to some conventions in the next few months, and I plan on showing more teasers of the show until its release in sometime later this year. You can visit my website in the description and check out the new items, along with signing up for emailed updates as we get closer to the premiere date. I'm still going to post regular videos here on YouTube. Like I said earlier, I have an amazing team working on these YouTube videos. It's just, this is why it's been longer between uploads, okay? Thank you all again, and I hope you enjoy the show. When you watch it. Later this year. And if you're planning on going to VidCon in Anaheim this year, I will be showing exclusive clips and storyboards at my panel. That's only in, like, a couple of days. You don't even have to wait that long. But if you really want to see something and you just can't wait, then I guess... See, everything worked out.
Aw, I want to be a ladder!
Hey, man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same? That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out.
Hey, guys, did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous?
Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it. No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects. Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring. Hello? You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy? A watch. Really? What a nerd. Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, "Don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful." And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except, my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom?
Thank you for not letting me do that.
In the 7th grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's. Hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new 2 pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is. Seriously, 2 pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants. And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill. At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes, and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill, and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get demonetized. But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon.
You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the words I said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They are gross. Cuties and herpes.
Yeah, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the odd ones out. Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's 2 shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple 2 $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look everyone, I got $40. But again, if you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear. But I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name-brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a, I don't know, a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, "James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character."
That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons.
One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my sole. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, "Hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right?" So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets. And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, "Hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. You want to come sit at our lunch table?" And I said, "No, being cool sucks!" So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is a whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry, everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, "Oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks." And she said, "Oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair."
What?
That got me wondering. Did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, "Oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair." No! Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From 5th grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the
Mythbusters from your average fourth grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you're anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question: what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in fourth grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as "I think this will happen." No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy, and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. All right, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever, except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all of that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria, and you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it, but me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha, and that made me wonder... wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. And I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Neil, yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop?
Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again.
Are you sure about that?
When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series, which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skekso, Skeksil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes? And visually, it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies. And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please. And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayunip, hello. Hey.
Hey, just a heads up, don't get too attached to any of the hamsters mentioned in this video, because they're all dead. And I would say that no hamsters were harmed in the making of this video. Well, I mean, no hamsters were harmed while I made this video. They're all still dead. But some hamsters, they got harmed. Just keep watching. If there's anything I've learned that the internet just loves is stupid drama and cute animals. So I'm going to talk about all the cute hamsters that I've enslaved. Our family enslaved quite a lot. It was my twin sister who really wanted a pet hamster and bugged my mom to get one. And my mom, being super nice, bought her the cage, and we bought everything else, including a little black hamster. We named him Squeaks. And he liked to do this really cute thing where he put all of his food in his hamster wheel and was made of plastic so he could do that. And then late at night, he would just run in it and it would sound like... It was like a more annoying maraca. I actually made a comic on paper inspired by this hamster. Wow, you got a hamster? Yeah, but he doesn't do much. Well, yeah, this type of hamster is nocturnal. Really? That means I'll hardly notice him. And then at night, he's trying to sleep, but the hamster is loud, and that's keeping him awake. And the joke is that he said he'd hardly notice him, and he's noticing him. It's not that funny. And I need to tell you about a dog that we have named Georgie. And actually, a little fun fact about Georgie. She was born on Election Day of 2004, which is a much cooler holiday to have a birthday on. It only comes once every 4 years. It's like leap year. It's more rare. So since George W. Bush won the 2004 election, we named our dog Georgie after him. Aww. And that also means that our 12th birthday was on the 2nd. I definitely won't be able to get this video out by that time, but still.
Happy birthday to you. Yay! So Georgie can get the birthday, because it's her birthday, and Poppy can get the girl, because she's a girl. Do you like it?
I wonder if this tastes good.
Oh.
This is a huge waste of money.
Anyway, back to rodents. This dog just loved to murder these animals. Well, I don't know if murder's the right word. No, murder's the right word. You have to understand that Georgie is a West Highland Terrier, and that breed is known for hunting small animals. So having Georgie and a hamster in the same house doesn't mix well. We had this little plastic hamster ball that we put Squeaks in sometimes. The first time we put Squeaks into his plastic ball, my older brother bowled him. Like a bowling ball. PETA, don't sue me. I was vegan for a week. And Georgie thought it was a treat just for her. A treat with a hard outer shell and a juicy middle. She would go straight up rabid wolf on that hamster ball. We didn't put Squeaks inside his hamster ball anymore after that. But there's even more to say about this hamster. One day, me and my sister came home from school and Squeaks was just gone. He escaped! Everyone, check your pockets! We looked everywhere and we couldn't find him. We had to keep a close eye on Georgie at all times. My sister put up missing posters around the house. I don't know if those helped. We made these traps out of Duplo. Did anyone else's parents get them Duplo instead of Legos? No, only my parents were that lame. Alright. We built this box thing out of Duplo, and we made these stairs going up to the top of the box, and we put lettuce on each step, and the plan was that the hamster would walk up the stairs and fall in the box, cause they're stupid. But the traps never worked. And all the hamsters we got in the future that also escaped, we made the same traps, and not once did they ever work. 4 days. Squeaks was missing for 4 days. We found his body inside the wall. He was alive! My dad was sitting on the couch relaxing. It was dead quiet, and he just heard the faintest... Squeaks was inside the wall! We think he got in through our laundry chute. I don't know what I would do if my kid's hamster was inside the wall of my house. Well, kids, now's an important time I teach you about death. My dad ended up cutting 3 holes in the wall and lured Squeaks out with some lettuce. Poor thing, he was probably starving. Hopefully he kept some extra food in his cheeks. So even being tormented by the dog and getting stuck in the wall for 4 days, Squeaks still lived a fulfilling 2 years of life. Hamsters don't have that long a lifespan. We buried him in the backyard. After the Squeaks dynasty, we got some more hamsters. Squeaks 2, that was the next one. We thought maybe if we introduced Squeaks 2 to Georgie, then they could be friends and get along. I'll spare you the details of what happened that night. The next one we named Killer because he kept biting us, so get it? Killer? Yeah, he ended up getting killed. Nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't killed. He lived a long and normal hamster life. Squeaks 2 was killed, though. I don't know if you picked up on that. We bought these 3 little hamsters. Seriously, they're the most adorable little things. They look like this. I forgot their names. We'll just call them the 3 amigos. Aw. The lady at the pet store told us that if we bought hamsters from the same litter, they would all get along. She was obviously just trying to sell us more hamsters. Or maybe she didn't have any siblings. But these bros just hated each other. They would never stop fighting. As I was writing the script for this, I thought, well, maybe they were just aggressively playing. So I googled, do hamsters play with each other, just to be sure, and the first thing that showed up, dwarf hamsters, which is what the 3 amigos were, are quite territorial and will not see former cage mates as old friends. They see them as threatening rivals. So there we go, you really know your hamsters, lady. So we had to get 3 different cages for them. We put them right next to each other, and I swear they still gave each other some death glares. I actually made a video a long time ago about this time I broke one of their cages. I was cleaning it outside, and for whatever reason, I was like, huh, I wonder if I could stand on it. The answer, no, I couldn't. The glass broke and I bled everywhere, and I still have the scar on my foot. And then all the 3 amigos died off, one by one. Sorry, I'm getting really emotional. We also had this other hamster named Buddy, and I wasn't going to mention him because he just escaped and we never found him. Except as my mom was reading over the script, because she reads over my scripts, thanks mom, she turned to me and said, "Did we ever tell you what happened to Buddy?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "You know how we couldn't find him? Well, we did, but the dog got to him first. This one time I wanted to buy a hamster and I saw some that were on sale, and there was this piece of paper next to the cage that said, 'Please adopt us.' Oh shoot, I'll take one of these puppies." No, not an actual puppy. I meant one of the hamsters. And I named her Pumpkin Seed because she was that tan pumpkin seed color. But then 1 month after I got her, she just died for no reason, even though I loved her. She had food, she had water. This wasn't the first time I was taking care of a hamster, okay? All the other ones lived for a couple of years. I was so sad. I totally got chipped. No wonder they were on sale. They were all halfway to death's door. I mean, I only had the hamster for a month. I didn't get that emotionally attached to it. But then later, I got a different hamster that I paid full price for, and I named her Gumball. Unlike all the other hamsters that were technically my sister's, this hamster was all mine. And she didn't have anything traumatic happen to her. She had a good hamster life. I was pretty sad when Gumball died. We lavished these hamsters, okay? We loved them. At least my sister did. She cried when they died and made little gravestones for them. Our mom used to always say, "There's no point in being a skinny hamster." She gave them a lot of treats, so much so that it got to the point that the hamster would come out looking for my mom just by the sound of her voice. All in all, there's about 7 dead hamsters buried in our backyard. Rip in peace, little bros.
Yeah, I'm 25. That's a quarter of a century. And I've been doing YouTube full-time for a nickel of a century. My life's practically over. I'm at a point now where when people recognize me, they'll say, "OMG, James, I've been watching you since the 8th grade." And I'll be like, "OMG, your beard is bigger than mine." So I've been thinking, you know those going through puberty videos your 8th grade science teacher shows you for some reason? The ones that are like, "Hey boys, I'm the puberty platypus, and I'm here to tell you that your body is going through some wonderful changes. You're gonna start growing hair in weird places, and smelling bad, but that's just the wonders of life." And then for the girl one, it's like, "Oh, ladies, you're gonna want to sit down for this one." Well, I think they need to make a puberty part 2 video that they show to high school seniors and prepare them better for the quote-unquote adult life they're about to face. Schools just give you a piece of paper and a funny hat and send you off into the world expecting you to figure out your intricate and complicated life through what? Trial and error? I want the puberty part 2 video that I'm planning on making to start like this. The puberty platypus will come back on screen and will be like, "Well, kids, you did it. See? Puberty wasn't so bad. For some of you. Unfortunately, dear children, this is only the beginning." And then he'll start talking about all the fun things you can expect in the following years. Like, instead of growing hair in new places, for some of you, your hair is going to start thinning and falling out. And if you're a guy worried about hair loss, then I've got good news. This video is sponsored by Bald People. They're paying me money to tell you to just shave it all. Shave it. Looking good, Rush! You're also going to be perpetually tired. And before you start thinking, "I'm not going to be tired, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep every night." First of all, no you're not. And second of all, that's not going to help. You will still be tired, and there's no escape. Why do you think adults say, "Ha ha ha, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee"? It's because every adult, from the moment they wake up, is dead tired. And we need stimulants just to function. You're also going to start getting excited about things you used to think were stupid, like furniture shopping. Sometimes you'll go on Zillow and look at the most expensive houses and think, "Oh, that's a nice kitchen backsplash," and then wonder where your youth went. Another thing, 90% of the mail you get is worthless, but the other 10% of mail is very, very important. Like, if you ignore it, your water, power, and Wi-Fi get shut off. Important. Or you'll get mail that's like, "Hey, you owe the government some money, and we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you, stupid. So you either have to figure that out yourself, or pay another person some money so they can tell you how much money you owe the government." Hey there. I don't want you to be scared of growing up. There's still plenty of pros that come with being older. And also, you can't escape it. You'll get to be independent and make your own decisions. Did your parents never let you get a tattoo? Well, now you can. But I'm going to put it somewhere that I can easily cover it up when I visit them for Christmas. That way it's not weird if I exclusively wear turtlenecks around them. I just like them.
Another pro, you won't complain about the food you have at home because you'll only ever buy the food you like and can afford. You're independent now. You can eat cake for breakfast. However, if you do that, your stomach will hurt and you won't be able to move for 8 hours. Okay, at first you'll be able to get by with bagel bites for dinner. That's a standard college-grade meal. But after a couple of years of that abuse, your body will go,
"Yo, do you think you could throw down some, I don't know, fruit every once in a while? Yeah, we gotta make, like, new cells for your developing brain, and we've been making them solely out of bagel bites."
It is genuinely upsetting that I have to figure out what I have to eat 3 times a day.
There are some days where I'm hungry, but I'm not craving anything, and I know I have to eat, but I'm looking through my fridge, and I end up eating string cheese and grapes for lunch. On a bagel. I wish I could just unhinge my jaw and eat a month's worth of food like a snake. Do snakes only eat once a month? I don't know, I hate snakes. 50% of my driving destinations is to the grocery store, and the other 50% is drive-thrus. It's all food-based. Oh, actually, sometimes I do have to go to the gas station. Wait, that's just food for my car. I've been trying to eat out less, so I bought boxed frozen orange chicken instead of going to Panda Express. But then I realized, I'm still eating out, I'm just heating up the orange chicken in my own microwave. Some of you might like cooking. I don't. Whenever I cook a meal, I purposely cook way more food than I need so I can get 2 meals out of only cooking one. I would rather eat progressively staler pasta all week than have to cook every day. But even if you like cooking, I know one aspect of it you don't like, cleaning up the mess afterwards. Why do you think the rule, I cooked it, you clean it, exists? And now that you're an adult, you're about to learn, it never stops. Get used to doing the dishes and laundry because as long as you eat and sweat, those are 2 chores you do until the grave. Laundry is such a prevalent chore that I guarantee someone watching this video needs to put the wash into the dryer, but instead they're watching YouTube. Well, go on. Leave. I don't know how I'm going to handle folding dishes and cleaning laundry for the rest of my life. I'm only 25 and already burned out from it. Hey, speaking of burnout, I want to talk about something I just learned recently called having a healthy work-life balance. Some of you might have started working from home this last year. Welcome to the club. You now have no reason to go outside. So take it from a guy who's been working from home for 5 years. Go outside anyway. There's definitely benefits to working from home, like you get to work in your pajamas and... But it can be tough to work and live under the same roof, and I think a lot of young people have this mindset of being on the grind is a good thing, or at least a normal one. While it is important to work hard to achieve your goals, you need to be aware of burnout. And as a content creator who is his own boss, it's very easy to fall into an unhealthy work ethic. If you think your boss is annoying, try having a boss that lives inside your head and will not shut up about working. It could be Saturday and you're hanging out with your friends and your boss in the back of your head will say, "You could be working." There will always be work that needs to be done, you will always feel anxious about not posting, and since you technically live in the office, you could theoretically work well into the early hours of the morning every night. Or morning, I don't know. I want to talk more about burnout and my YouTube journey and how I'm managing it, but that will be for another time because I've been working on it. I'm definitely getting better, I'm more relaxed on the weekends and going to more social settings, vaccinated of course. It's taken me a while to learn the importance of a healthy work-life balance and that it's okay to work on yourself. I'm not sure if you all related to that last part, maybe give it a couple of years. But anyways, growing up is a part of life, adulthood is something that you all should be looking forward to, you learn and experience so many things, and that's just your early 20s. And before I go, is there anything you want to add, Puberty Platypus? Am I ever going to find something I'm truly passionate about? I drift through every day doing what feels like nothing, seeing all my high school friends getting married and starting families, doing things that they're happy and excited about. It makes me feel even more isolated in my state of confusion and solitude. Who am I? Why don't I know myself anymore? What went wrong?
Bagel Bite?
Hello everyone, it's me, James. I just wanted to let you know that I'm launching this card game called Cafe Chaos on Kickstarter today. There'll be more info at the end of the video. This isn't some bit. I actually made a card game and I worked really hard on it, so please click the link in the description to get your...
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the learning channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. No, this video isn't sponsored by TLC, but if they wanted to sponsor me, I'd say no. I just want to be on an episode of My Strange Addiction. I'll tell you what the addiction is later, TLC. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height, he lied about wanting to have kids with her, he's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people, and a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable, but this is his girlfriend! At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half-year age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously, this graph isn't set in stone. But for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though. The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and a quarter of a million US dollars on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now, he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a fourth trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail-order...
Наречена.
Who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show, but I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey, DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey, James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment, this rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what it used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny. And I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true. I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you, I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, loser. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200-pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and... oh my god, is that Big Ed?
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the fuck up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad. I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi. What you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill. Like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than chutes. In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played? There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron.
Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4, I don't want to play that game. Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy-based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone, because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the... Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at... D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these 5 pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you ask someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all 3 card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and
balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like.
So originally, I was going to make a vlog about VidCon, but while I was there, I was like, I don't want a vlog. If you do want to see a proper VidCon vlog, then go watch any of my friends' vlogs on their channels. I'm in those. Yeah. So something else that happened at VidCon that was really awesome, I got to meet Captain Sparkles. Me and Jaden from Jaden Animations, we went to Captain Sparkles' signing together, and there was a pretty decently sized line to meet him. And while we were there, the security guard saw our all-access passes. We had all-access passes because Jaden was a featured creator and got to talk on a panel. So the security guard was like, hey, do you just want to cut ahead? I can get you to cut ahead. And I said, no, because one, that's rude, and two, what would I even do? Like, was this security guard gonna push me past everyone else, holding me by my shoulders and telling Jordan, this 20-year-old boy really wanted to meet you, and he has a better pass than everyone else, so he's better than all of these fake fans. So instead, me and Jaden waited like an hour backstage, and we got to meet John and Hank Green, who finished signing before Jordan, and we said hi to them, and they were super cool and nice. And then eventually,
Nice makeshift shirt. I know, yes. I saw that in the video.
Uh-huh.
There was a delay. Delayed getting his shirt. You. He works for Maker.
It wasn't me.
One day.
Yeah, you said like 7 business days.
It got there, though.
I wore it yesterday.
This one, we don't even have this one.
Yeah, now you got to start printing those ones.
All right,
that's better.
Are you filming right now, by the way?
Yeah, he wants to film,
like,
too.
The whole vlog that I'm doing. I'm making the vlog. Like, this is the whole vlog.
Really? Do you have a vlog channel?
No.
Or a vlog on
this? No, I'm just going to post this video. Just like,
really?
Hey, VidCon 2K16.
Okay. Look at this. Will this be like the first vlog you've ever done?
Yeah. I mean, I've done like other IRL videos.
Now, can you like motion track and composite in some animated stuff into this?
3D.
So we're like,
oh, make it like difficult.
Like, oh my goodness, can you motion track and do it here? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yo, what's up, stick figure, dude?
Uh huh.
How's it going?
He's right here.
Oh man.
He's moving across the screen right now.
It's so good to see you. Yeah, you're so famous from all the videos
that I just made.
Yeah. Now you're like obligated to do this.
I have to.
Yep.
I just added in like double the effort for this.
Now it's not coming out till 3 months later.
It'll take 3 months.
Well, yeah, thanks for watching my
sunglasses. And your sunglasses, Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
Forgot that.
Oh, I need to see those.
Yes.
Sunglasses.
Oh, it finally happened, the moment.
He was a lot shorter than I imagined. You know, everyone I met was a lot shorter than I imagined. Maybe I'm just taller than I imagined. Also, I just want to tell one more story. So me and the squad went to Disneyland on Sunday, and on the last ride we went on, the Haunted Mansion, we saw a group of YouTubers in line, but sort of off in their own space, and I see Captain Sparkles in the group, and I just call out, "Hey, Jordan!" And then the security guard that was with them tried to get in between us, but then Jordan was like, "Oh, no, man, it's cool, I know this guy!" There's not really a twist to this story, I just thought it was pretty cool that Jordan told the security guard I was cool. So thanks for watching this vlog. I wouldn't call this a vlog. Be sure to check out these other real vlogs my friends did if you want to get the full VidCon 2016 experience and not just me fanboying over Captain Sparkles. We're not going to do an end card this time. Goodbye, and remember to wear your seatbelt.
If you haven't read Lord of the Flies, you're probably going to have to in school one day. Let me give you an abridged version for when that time eventually comes. The Lord of the Flies is a book about a bunch of little British boys who got marooned on a deserted island, and the book tells the story about what the boys do to survive the elements, but also themselves. Within like a week on the island, the boys devolve into complete savages, covering themselves in face paint and killing a piggy.
I said too much.
And when I read the book in high school, I thought having the boys turn savage so quickly wasn't all that accurate. As a former young boy myself, I was insulted that William Golding thought that us little boys were so heartless. But then I remembered all the things that happened at my scout camp, Camp Geronimo, and I realized that Lord of the Flies is still inaccurate. The boys would have gone savage way faster. Listen, I'm a cautious person when I'm hanging around the guys. In PE, the other boys would be playing this game called Quarters, where you would fling quarters at people's knuckles until they bled. But I wouldn't play that game because it's dangerous and I'm a loser. Or when I was at a party and someone wanted to play the knife game to show off how good their hand-eye coordination was, I wouldn't play that game either because I needed my hands to draw. But something about being with the guys in the middle of the woods, I would live on the edge. Every summer, our troop stayed at this camp called Camp Geronimo, named after the Apache Indian who was the first person to yell Geronimo while doing a sick backflip into his pool. One time, me and a couple other boys, I don't remember who started it, but we were playing with matches, and okay, I know what you're thinking, but nothing bad happened, okay? We just accidentally lit some dried bushes on fire, and it got somewhat out of control, but it's okay, it's fine, okay? We told the scoutmaster that there was a loose fire spreading faster than we could put it out, and he got everyone in the troop to stomp on it, and we never got in trouble. What were we doing with the matches? Oh, we were just lighting them and throwing them at each other. Anyway, about 30 other scout troops attended Camp Geronimo, and we would spend a whole week sleeping in tents and earning merit badges. Most of the camp honestly felt like school, but outside. Like, when you got to the camp, you were given a schedule of classes, and for the next 7 days, you would go to those classes and learn and fill out packets and sometimes even have homework, which probably helped us not devolve into savages. I mean, sure, the classes weren't as boring as English or geometry. Geronimo's classes were wilderness survival, kayaking, or bear self-defense. Earning a merit badge required two things. The first thing, you had to write stuff down. Name and point out the major parts of a kayak. Kayak. Explain to your counselor the hazards you are most likely to encounter while participating in kayaking activities. Bears. And the second part of the merit badge, you had to actually go out and do stuff. Capsize the kayak, swim it and the paddle to the shore, and if you don't make it, the bears will get you. I never got the kayaking merit badge. You had to be at least 12 to go to Geronimo, but you could go as an 11-year-old if a parent was coming with you. And at the time, my dad was a camp counselor. My birthday was May 14th, and Geronimo was at the end of May, so I barely made the cutoff as the youngest person going. Geronimo was a big step from spending 3 days at Cub Scout Day Camp to spending a week in the wilderness. What made it worse was I was going to be spending a whole week with all the mean older scouts and my dad. There was this one scout named Paul. When I was 11, he was 15. So naturally, he would pick on me and make fun of me. Ha ha, I get it. I'm small, so I suck. But silver lining, he got fatter. And a couple years ago, he reached out to me. And I had been doing the whole YouTube thing for a while. He was off starting his own business. And he wanted to do some business opportunity with me. And I just said, hey, do you want to do my merch? So now he works for me. So kids, if you ever have bullies, just become successful on YouTube and then hire them to sell plushies. He's actually a really good merch guy. He gets all my stuff into these retail stores. So if you see a Floof plushie at Hot Topic, you can say, thanks, Paul. Bullies really do make a difference. Anyway, self-promotion aside, my first year at Geronimo, I was a little bit on the very young side compared to everyone else. I was taking a class called Orienteering. The class taught us how to read maps and use a compass. And one day, it was time for our class to go on a scavenger hunt thing. We were given a list of places we had to go to, and we were supposed to use our compass and count our paces to get to each specific location. Then when we got to our destination, there would be a marker somewhere, and we would have to write down what that marker was. There were 10 different markers that we had to find, and the course was supposed to lead us in a circle. The leader who was in charge of our group and the compass was an older scout named Paul. It wasn't the merch guy Paul, but I think it would be funnier if it was. Our group set off to the first location. Having a compass and counting your steps isn't the most accurate way of navigation, but we weren't allowed to use Google Maps, so. When we got to the spot, we had to look around for a little bit to find the marker, but we eventually found it, and then we were off to the second location. This time, the marker was harder to find. The spot we landed on was pretty far from where the marker actually was. At the third location, we couldn't find the marker. But we did see this reflective sign on a tree, and we figured that's what the marker was supposed to be, so we wrote it down. At this point, I decided to grab my own compass and give it a try. My compass pointed in a direction that was a little bit off from Paul's direction. Not by a whole lot, but just enough. But remember,
I was the little kid. Nothing I said mattered. Paul said things to me like, oh, you don't know how to use a compass. I bet yours is broken. I'm never going to work for you one day. And you know what? I believed him. This guy is 15 years old. Do you know how wise and experienced he is? So we kept going and struggling. We used anything we found as a marker. Some piece of trash, it's a marker. Hey, this tree has an A and an M carved into a heart. Kind of weird that it's at an all-boys camp. Do you think that it's a marker? Eventually, we all had to admit that we were completely lost. The other boys told Paul to hand over his compass, and Paul reached into his pocket, pulled out his compass, and two buzz magnets. Buzz magnets are magnets that are shaped like a bullet, and you can throw them up in the air, and they make this cool buzzing sound. They sold them at the camp store, so that's why Paul had them. And everyone immediately figured out why we were lost. For those of you who don't know how compasses and magnets work, I don't know either. I think it has something to do with them coming from outer space. A compass is supposed to point to the magnetic North Pole, and a magnet will mess up the direction a compass is supposed to point in. Paul's compass wasn't pointing to his pants the whole time. We would have been suspicious if that had happened. But because his compass was right next to a magnet, it got uncalibrated. And then we all got lost in the woods and died. And that's why I don't have an orienteering merit badge. I was upset because my compass probably wasn't broken, but I didn't stand up for myself. Because I don't do that. I have more Camp Geronimo stories, like the time me and my friend threw a Ziploc bag full of water at the older kid's lean-to, and then I ran away so fast that I threw up. But I already did a video about that, and it's 5 years old, and it's very bad, and you're not allowed to watch it. So the moral of this video is, just because you're young doesn't mean you're stupid, but it does mean you make bad videos on YouTube. Also, check your pockets before going orienteering. Going orienteering. Sounds like a tongue twister. Going orienteering. Going orienteering. Going orienteering.
Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furry. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bitch. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so we won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so here we go. This is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, three sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? Now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day. And the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, ah, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work. Especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work. Or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible. But we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket, because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly? Later! It's also teaching you to make up lies